morning.
Hi, Brenda.
I have pen.
Just a minute. Did you put my pen back together?
Is it a fancy pen or just a regular pen?
Good old.
Okay, good old.
59 cent plastic pen, but it's falling apart. They don't build them like these. All right, good morning, everybody. I'll call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, January 98, 2018. Just seeing everybody listen. Tuesday, April 17, 2018.
It feels like it.
It does feel like January 98, doesn't it? And ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, thank you again and good morning. Don't pay any attention to the winter storm warning on tap for tomorrow morning. And we'll start with public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on anything they'd like. Anybody wishing to do so, come on up. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of financial support for RAGBRAI in Story County 2018.
Morning, Julie.
Morning.
How is everything this morning?
Everything is great this morning.
There's no snow.
Yes.
Beautiful day. No, it's not coming. As you know, RAGBRAI is coming. And we're working closely with that, and I'd like to talk a little about that. But also, Sean Damaris is with me with our office. In case you have any logistical questions about going through the county, he's been working much closer with RAGBRAI. Going through the county is a real opportunity for the three communities, and we're here today to talk on behalf of those three communities. They met in Ames as pass-through communities a week ago on Saturday. And the discussion that we had between the three communities is it would be extremely helpful if each of those communities could receive support from the county. Because it really is a day for us to have showcase and stand out for Story County as well as our individual communities. So we were hoping that we could ask the county for somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,500 to $2,000 per community, which would help with the marketing and advertising of those communities and the promotion throughout RAGBRAI, and then also some of the infrastructure in the smaller communities. With that, we also took a look at the county website and other information, and this is a time when we're going to have 20 to 30,000 cyclists go through our county, and we really do not have a good cycling map, a bicycle map, or we're not really promoting cycling as strongly as we could. So we'd also like to work with the county and make sure that we could beef up that opportunity to showcase some of the great bike trails that we have in the county, and also make sure that all these communities are linked to that then, so that when they're giving the information out about RAGBRAI, we could also entice all of those cyclists to come back and ride some of our other trails at a different time.
Outstanding. Well, thank you. First of all, thank you for all the work you guys have put in to this point. I've enjoyed serving on one of the groups that you have, trying to figure out exactly how logistically we're going to make all this work. Board, I think it's completely appropriate for us to consider supporting our three communities that are directly impacted by RAGBRAI this year. I think it's really important that we also consider that's not the only financial, depending on what we decide to do there, that's not our only financial obligation here. We're going to have some overtime for sure with our sheriff's office. We're going to have overtime for sure with our secondary roads people. Those are things that we did not build into the budget. And so we need to recognize that. We need to determine what our position is in terms of supporting that. Are we expecting this to just be absorbed in our existing budget, or are we willing to put a few additional dollars in to get all that done? I actually, Julie, I'm so appreciative that the request sounds like it is treat all three communities the same, whatever we do. I think that's completely the appropriate way for this board to handle it, and I appreciate you making that request. Marty, Laura's thoughts or questions?
Listening to the other Nevada and Colo have conversations with themselves in regards to what they are going to do specifically, I think I have comfort in saying if it's $2,000 a community, I think the county would be well served to put its best foot forward, and if that is a dollar attachment, so be it. I think that, you know, Rick does make a touch on the fact that we will be asking departments that to do the above and beyond, and that does come at a cost. I think that we have the fiscal wherewithal to make that happen, that we've done a good job of budgeting up to this point, and I think we do this. I mean, I like the fact that you're thinking beyond that day of RAGBRAI for the fact that as we do move forward and we are looking at doing a potential trail pavement for these bike paths, that we would say that, hey, not today, but here shortly, why don't you come back and see us?
There's a lot of potential with the cycling community for them.
I definitely support it. You know, I kind of urge you guys to maybe ask, make an ask. I like to hear that it's going to the three communities, you know, split up as opposed to like going for kind of general operating expenses, because I know you guys have them, and so your budget's going to be a little inflated too. So, and the trail map idea, I think, you know, Mike Cox out here, okay, and I think Mike's probably the one to work with you on that, and then Bob Steinbeck, our director of IT, is in the back of the room for website connections. So I would move, all right, that we authorize. I'm comfortable with the $2,000, so I will move for $2,000 for each of the three communities to help support in marketing and logistics for them for RAGBRAI.
And you have a super, before we get a second, do you have a thought of where that would come from? So your options, I think you've got two real options for us. It can come straight out of the general fund, or it could come from loss, from local loss.
Right. I believe we have a little bit of an overage in loss, correct? Yeah. And that is normally, that is where the rest of the tourism money comes from. So I'd like to stay consistent with that.
Okay. So I hear your motion, $2,000 per community coming out of loss. I would just encourage you, you mentioned Mike Cox and Bart Steinbeck. I think the question of the maps is more of a Matt Boykin, GIS, and Leanne Harder to try
sorry
to figure
about
out
that.
How to put that together. But I'd say whatever resources we need to put toward this. So do I have a second for Horace's motion?
You have a second, but I'd like to hear you flesh out when you talk about additional cost to secondary roads sheriffs. Mm-hmm. Where that, I mean, is that something that we are expectation they would do that out of their own budgets, or is that something we would be providing for?
Yeah, so I think our primary cost in both of those areas is going to be in overtime. And my hope would be that they can absorb it in their existing overtime budget, but if we get to the end of FY19 and we're pushing up against it in overtime, let's say we have a snowy winter and secondary roads is already using their overtime, I would hope there would be an upfront commitment of this board that we're not going to allow the sheriff's budget or the secondary roads budget to get in a bad position based on what they have to do for RAGBRAI.
So we're putting down a marker today saying.
And it's not even an official marker, Marty. I think it's more of philosophical. If that's where we are, we need to give Darren Moon and Paul Fitzgerald some comfort that that's where we are. Lisa?
Well, remember, when you set the budget, you don't do 100% of the salaries anyway. Right. So by the time we get to the end of the fiscal year, mm-hmm. we're always adjusting for whatever happened throughout the fiscal year to make sure we have enough money anyway. So the difference, that 5% that you typically have to amend in, it may be higher.
Yeah. And just a philosophical commitment that we recognize this is above and beyond, right? What happened with RAGBRAI is above and beyond what we were expecting when we set our budget. And we need to recognize that, right?
I've already given you
a motion and a second. $2,000 per community. My thought would be that $2,000 would go to each community directly, whatever group they have. In our case, it's Commission and Visitor Bureau. In Ames, I'm not sure what group is spearheading it for Nevada or Colo. But let's get the money directly to them. And I'm hearing no strings attached. Each community should use those dollars as they see fit. Accurate?
Yes.
Okay. Any further discussion?
None.
Olson?
Aye.
Chee?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. $2,000 per community. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We will bring you more cyclists in the future.
Outstanding.
Have a good Tuesday.
Yeah.
Next item is discussion consideration of urban renewal area project for Story City, and I think specifically talking about extending the deadline to utilize that. Mark Jackson and Leanne Hart.
Morning, Leanne. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
How's your community, Mark? Friday night.
Only, you know, the only one that really took the hardest hit was NextEra Energy. Other than that, everything else is fine.
Good.
Yeah. Okay, I'm pulling this up for Brenda, actually. This has nothing to do with it. <that.
laughs>
So, here, because I'm going to actually hand off to Mark. Mark contacted me a couple weeks ago. There's some delays with, I'll let him go into detail, with the project in the North Park. It was ironically almost a year ago to the day that you took action on extending the project to May 1st of 2018. That's some weather issues. And for that, I'll tee it up and give it to you.
Well, as Mr. Weatherman there pointed out just recently.
That's me.
And thanks again for the allocation of funds for the North Park project. When this project got substantially wrapped up last December-ish, all that was left to be done was the stonework on the columns for the shelter. That was it, which was going to be done in the spring. You know what it's been like weather-wise. So when I contacted Leanne a couple weeks ago, we were kind of going, ooh, I'm not sure we're going to hit that May 1st. Actually, if we could extend it another month, we should be done. In fact, the stone columns, we had that window of opportunity. They did get those done, so really all we're going to do now is have a walkthrough this week in the punch list items, and we should be done. But I don't think we're going to hit that May 1st date just because of the unusual weather we've had.
I think this is pretty easy, but I would encourage you. It is important that we get it done yet in this fiscal year.
And so that's why...
not before June 30.
No, I know that's the fiscal year is the important thing, so we'll have it wrapped up way before the end of the fiscal year, and I'll turn it... Believe me, Rick, I'll turn in to get my money before the end of the fiscal year. You know me well enough.
Yeah, you don't generally leave a lot on the table.
No.
Board, any questions or comments, or can I have a motion to give the extension through June 30, 2018?
I would move that we extend the urban renewal project granting dollars for Story City through June 30, as presented.
Thank you.
I second, and I hope that you are right. Spring is on its way.
Second? Super. Further discussion? Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Thank you. Agency reports. We get to hear from Nancy Carroll again this week, this time in her role with Harper.
Morning, Nancy.
Hi,
morning.
Nancy, we're going to just start having a standing report from you.
That's
every
right,
week.
Just every Tuesday about 10:05. Thank you. With all sincerity, that we have the opportunity to come and represent our agencies. The overview sheet we mailed to you last week demonstrates what the county support is specifically, and out of roughly $1 million budget, you can see that through Story County Asset, you folks are participating at $105,000 a year, and that is significant out of $1 million budget. So first of all, thank you. What are you getting for those dollars? When we add them with the other funders that we receive, we like to break it out from Ames to then the other Story County communities for you folks. And as you can see, we've got about 427 residents that actively do something with Heartland throughout the year. And when you multiply then how much they participate of those over 400 people, it's about 2,300 different touch points we have in their lives. And we have those four program areas of activities: adult day, nutrition, and outreach. And I can assure you that with the dollars anyone invests with Heartland, being the public funders or the private dollars we receive through philanthropy, our goal is to always be efficient and effective. And I think we've really tried to ramp that up in principle with our most recent relationship a year ago when I was here talking about combining meals with Mary Greeley. That's just been a year ago in January that we started, and I would say it's worked very well. They cook and we deliver. But the delivery part is really essential, because what we're even trying to do now more is to connect outreach, which is one of the programmatic areas, to nutrition. Because we have specialists that go out and meet one-on-one with people that want to participate or are currently participating in Meals on Wheels. And of those 125 to 150 people a year, They are some of Story County's most vulnerable and frail people. The whole goal is to find more out about their life than just the meal, which is central, but there's usually, like an onion, so much more that needs, they need support, and that's what outreach specifically does. So there are wonderful stories of how we've supported people, and your dollars are a part of that, and your support beyond the dollars is needed and appreciated. So
I want to underscore for those 150 people, for many of those 150 people, it's their only human contact for the day. I mean, this is a big, big deal. Clearly, the meal, like you said, is the centerpiece, and it's so important.
Right.
But this is so much more than that.
Right, exactly, Rick. Well said, and that's spot on. So that's what we're trying to do to help encourage their lives and be strategic in it. So,
Nikki, is Heartland still handling those boxes of food?
Yes, the little food boxes.
Okay.
Yes, that come from the state of Iowa.
And how is that going as far as recruiting volunteers? I see in the volunteer center of Story County, I continue to see the ad looking for volunteers for that.
Yeah, we're all, you know how that goes. Volunteers, of course, are awesome, but they do change their routine, so we always kind of keep that as a standing ask, but it's going very well. The supplemental food program is, again, probably some of the most needy folks in Story County, and so it's a huge investment in their lives, again, that they can receive that. So again, thank you. That's where some of your resources go to. So volunteers help, to your point, volunteers help run Heartland. You know, we've got so many people every day. Some of the people that are delivering the meals to those 125-plus people a day, they should probably be receiving meals. The average age of our volunteer for Meals on Wheels is probably 75. They're the most dedicated and committed people you've ever seen. And tomorrow they'll be out there even in the snow.
Absolutely. And they form relationships
yep.
with the people that they're delivering.
Yeah. And again, it's another thing. Again, Heartland's all about having people have a sense of belonging, sense of purpose. So for the volunteers, we see that exact thing. It's just in a different way that they're providing that for themselves and others.
Sure. Well, I'm one of those that I think when we lost the congregate meals, when the congregate mm-hmm. meals just became not feasible anymore, mm-hmm. if you look at meals in terms of nutrition, well, we're still able to do that. We're able to get that out. But it's bigger than that. If you look at it as a social experience, as an opportunity to hear and be heard, we lost that. And yep. so now trying to figure out a way to supplement what we
right.
lost.
That's
through
right.
everything else.
Well said.
Other thing that I would underscore, we talked about this a little last week in relation to the concept of the Healthy Life Center, but the reality is this. For this board and future boards, we've had facility issues with Heartland,
oh, yes.
and we've got to get that figured out, whether it's part of a Healthy Life Center concept or not. It doesn't excuse that we've got to get that figured out. This is, we see our senior population growing in numbers. We see people wanting to live independently longer and longer and longer, and the services that Heartland provides are vital.
Right.
And having a good center to provide it from, a reasonable center to provide it from, is vital.
Right. And I didn't touch upon in my notes to you in the overview of this presentation today, knowing that you're well aware of the Healthy Life Center, you've been an active participant in that. The Healthy Life Center is central to Heartland's long-term success. And the model of service delivery that now the new baby boomers and the earlier retirees are looking for. So, again, that's where we're committed and feel very good about that. Jeremy?
Outstanding. Questions or comments for Nancy?
No, she tells a very compelling story because we live, as you just said, in a state with the third largest population of above 65 and above. The gift of longevity comes at a cost because your social circle and your family tends to shrink. They leave us, and I have spent many time watching your volunteers go to doors and the tears shed over the fact somebody cared enough to feed them.
That's right. Yeah, thank you.
Good
thank
on you, and I don't know how you do it out of the small building you got. And the story is we need to plan going forward on finding something for you.
Yeah, well said. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so I want to, as you walk away from the table, how lucky we are. that you serve this community. And so your career is so apropos, right? So you, you know, you spent all the years with the Ames Department of Rec, primarily impacting our youngest generation and as they acclimate into life. And now, next stage of your career, you're dealing with our most senior members.
That I've won up.
And it's, I'm just fascinated to see what your next career looks
like. Thank you very much for those very nice compliments and words. And I've just been blessed to get to do it. I love quality of life and trying to make a difference. So thank you for letting me have that opportunity.
Outstanding. Thanks, Nancy.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Probably see you next week, I guess.
Yes.
Next is the ADC, Brenda Dreyer and Dan Colhanger here to visit with us today about all the things happening.
Morning, Brandon.
Yeah, I think if you keep working at it, I think maybe good economic things are going to start to happen in Story County. It's been an amazing 3 or 4 years that you've been spearheading, and Story County has so appreciated the relationship with the AEDC and what it means to our rural areas and our smaller communities, in addition to the flagship of Ames. Now I understand there's some real exciting news about what you've added to that.
Yes, indeed, and thank you for the kind words. We're thrilled. The Nevada Economic Development Organization's Board of Directors has reached out to us right after the first of the year, and subsequently we went through kind of a RFP process, and we were fortunate enough to be selected to be a contractor, much like we are with Story County, much like we are with the City of Ames, technically, and the Huxley community. It's really unique for us with Nevada because with our organization, Ames has a border with Nevada, and there's so much synergy between the two communities as it relates to future industrial development on the Lincoln Highway corridor. And so we're excited about that. The neat thing, I think, for the folks in Nevada, the business community in Nevada, is that their board continues, their budget continues, the direction for their organization will continue. And as I shared with an Ames Tribune reporter yesterday, I said, we are essentially an implementer. You know, the direction for their efforts will still come from their board of directors, which is the way it should be, and their current funders. And so we're excited about the opportunity. And on the flip side, we're encouraged and excited about the fact that we do have good infrastructure as a team. Brenda, with the workforce piece that is grown exponentially in the last 12 months since she joined us, the business retention piece, the external marketing piece. We're still doing some external marketing, but our focus has shifted so much to workforce as a result of low unemployment and business retention as a result of there's so many companies that are here that continue to want to expand. It's foolish, and oftentimes economic development organizations get accused of this, and many times rightfully so. They're chasing all over the country, chasing new opportunities, when the people that are back home are saying, if you pay attention to us, we could create 100 jobs. And so I think we've always been bullish on business retention, and that's a big component of what Brenda's doing, too, in the assortment of duties she has as she moves around Story County. So we appreciate the relationship we have here. We appreciate being given an opportunity to give an update today. And Brenda's really going to talk about all the work she's doing on your behalf. So I'll stop there. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Well, good morning. So you get a chance to hear about things really on two fronts with our update today. So I'm going to start by giving you really a recap on Workforce Solutions. And really, without your generous support of our initiatives, our program would not be what it is. I mean, you're a very strong supporter of that, and with your support, we were able to leverage some additional support from the community of Ames, and we have a lot of strong support from the private sector this year, and some new sponsors that we didn't have in the past, including one from Story City, and so we're very excited that we really have a real strong look at across our county.
And Brenda, as you get started, let me just underscore, so what Story County did this year is we increased our support directly to workforce by 60%, mm-hmm. Just in recognition of the facts you're getting ready to show us.
And so, I hope you'll see that already in 3 months, in our new year, we've really hit the ground running. So, a little bit of a glimpse at the unemployment situation, seems as if that's what we all talk about. We ended 2017 with an unemployment rate of 1.4% for Story County. Ames is the lowest metropolitan statistical area in the country. I'm always amazed at the phone calls that come into our office and people that want to talk to us about that. But most recently in February, we're up to 1.9%, and that's really driven by virtue of construction activity. And so up to 1.9%, still the lowest in the state of Iowa. And more importantly, if you look at it as compared to a year ago, we were at 2.4% a year ago. And there are very, very, very few places, if any, in the state of Iowa that have actually added jobs as a whole. And so we actually have added 1,000 jobs, and most of those being in the private sector in the last year.
Yeah.
So that's a big, exciting number to know that, I mean, really, what we measure, it's working.
Well, and I want to put, because it is a big, exciting number, I want to put that in perspective. So from 2000 to 2010, in Story County, Iowa, 500 private sector jobs were created. 10-year period, 500 private sector jobs. From 2011 through today, we're at about 6,000 private sector jobs, 12 times more. So it's 500 for 10 years, and now it's been 12 times more than that over the last 8 years. It's phenomenal work by so many people, you guys included, and it speaks so highly of where we are as a community and where we're poised to go.
And I would say to folks that they ask about that 1,000, it's not our offices keeping a tally when we add jobs. Those are reported by Workforce Development. So we always try to be very consistent in the sources we use, and that 1,000 is right from the unemployment report that came out just a few weeks ago.
Brenda, of the 1,000, did there appear to be one or two segments of the private sector that added most of the jobs?
For the purposes of the report, they just rank by private and public, but Dan, I think, would agree with me that it's very difficult to overlook the amount of manufacturing jobs that we've added. And I would say my year here with the organization, I'd say we probably led with manufacturing in the private sector, and closely behind is healthcare.
Well, for example, Hawk has increased their employment by 140 people in the last 12 months. Very quietly, and not without its challenges, but that's 140 jobs right there. And Craig has grown.
Dan Foss,
American Packaging in Story City has grown exponentially. So it's across the county. We've seen growth from a lot of our manufacturers.
So I would say we probably are leading with that, but that is not completely it. I mean, as you grow in population, you all know we also grow our need for health care and work in our nursing homes and our hospital and our clinics and hospitals, I should say, yes, because they're also hiring here in Nevada. In terms of year-to-date networking, so these are, well, those pictures have much prettier color in front of me, but this is through the end of March. And so we count connections in the business, knowing that connections really lead to other conversations. But we've had 146 connections with our businesses. And we've been out to visit 57 really different businesses in terms of seeing firsthand. And we were excited in March to actually be able to host the director of economic development. And we made the focus of that visit really about our manufacturing community and the needs they're experiencing as they want to grow and expand in Iowa. So got a picture of Dan Foss' visit, and then we hosted a lunch roundtable. Really, Debbie led that and facilitated that. So it's important that they have a voice, too, beyond just our county, to what is going on beyond Story County.
So the 146 connections, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously are about two a day, right?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Within the quarter. Uh-huh. So what do you count as a connection?
You know, if I specifically communicate with an employer, if they have a question, HR-related question, reach out beyond, there's a communication, it won't be face-to-face. So it's just really about, are we being very consistent in our communication and making sure that we're available. So, good question.
What's really been helpful, too, is Brenda's established deep relationships with all the human resource professionals in our county. And historically, we've always had a relationship with the plant manager, the president of the company, but that relationship is going deeper into the organization, and that's where I think a lot of those connections come from, too, is that the HR community is really relying upon Brenda for another outlet as they look to find people.
Are you planning on bringing back up the manufacturing meetings?
I actually am. So we're going to be hosting an HR meeting later this month, and the actual date of that is April 26th. And we're excited. Dan O, who's our current chair of our AEDC board, is actually going to be presenting on military hiring. So we've invited Alyssa and Nicole, and certainly if you want to join us, we'd welcome that. So he's going to talk about maneuvering military hiring, helping us understand a military resume. We have a new labor shed out. Richard Meisner and Leanne, I need to get the new salary data to you. So the folks from that department in Des Moines are going to be available to talk about what's happened to our wages over the past 12 months, talk a little bit about changes to our labor shed, commuting patterns. So we'll be doing that, and then hitting hard, too. As much as we spend time trying to get the message out about our workforce tools, there's still a lot of folks that we haven't reached. And so we sent the invitation out on Monday, and I'm already very pleased with the RSVPs for the meeting on the 26th. I had hoped to have a manufacturing meeting immediately following that, but we have a couple key advanced manufacturers that are not able to attend, and so we'll probably need to reschedule that. And the focus of that meeting will be about training. We see that as a real opportunity to take some of our underemployed people in Story County and continue to figure out a way to get them equipped to work in our manufacturing. So this is a checklist that we promote in terms of people who tell us, gosh, I can't find anybody to work for me, or I've got a lot of staffing needs. And I always go back to, are you doing these things that are on our Workforce Solutions checklist for 2018? So I'm going to break those down a little bit. First things first, we have a new logo, and I shared the tagline that we implemented a few months ago as we've continued to see job growth beyond Ames. So we added the tagline, your gateway to jobs in Story County. So our employers felt comfortable saying if we're promoting jobs beyond Ames. And so we also have sharpened up the logo. And so you're some of the first folks that have seen it. If you go to our social media, our websites, we have implemented it. But we're real excited about that. You'll see some additional looks if you go to our Facebook page, our web page, again, kind of tied into that blue and some of our other secondary colors. In terms of some statistics as it relates to work at Ames, through the end of March, we had 34,400 searches on work at Ames. We've had Facebook likes, so 1,154, Twitter impressions. That's just for the month of March. We track that on a monthly basis. We have, I want to stress the registered job seekers. So you've really got to be very thoughtful when you decide, I want to work in Ames or Story County, to go in and create a profile. So if 425 people, and I'm going to give you some either more current numbers as of Monday, we have 218 employers that are registered. A lot of people think, well, I don't need to register on Work at Ames because my jobs are posted on Indeed and are being swept into Work at Ames. Well, it's only when you post them directly to Work at Ames are you forced matched against those job seekers. So that's a message we need to continue to work to get out. If you search the site today, there are over 1,500 job opportunities. And I think maybe I've seen it down to 1,430, but really it's a pretty substantial amount of jobs. I do want to give you the numbers from Monday, and I haven't even shared these with Dan. I didn't get to them until last night. But last week we had 2,840 searches, which is the highest we've ever had in 1 week. And I've got a little bit of what we can attribute that to in my next slide. And that registered job seekers from the end of March to basically the 16th of April has grown to 469. And so And people say to me, well, there is nobody. I said, have you checked the 469 people that are on Work at Ames that want to work in Ames and Story County? So we know that there's a lot of things that are attractive about our county. We just need to continue to work to be a matchmaker in those efforts. Questions about Work at Ames?
No, but I'm just really impressed with the registered job seekers. I mean, quickly doing the math in my head, that's a 10% growth in 2 weeks.
It has. And now I'm going to tell you why here in just a minute.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So this spring, we are ahead of our searches by a long ways. And part of our strategy, and really with the additional support from you all, the City of Ames, and the private sector, we've been really able to intensify our efforts in going to people. And so we participated in the spring career fairs at the colleges. You can see them listed. There were some conflicts in dates. There are some that don't hold fairs. And then there are a couple that wouldn't allow us to participate because we're not an actual company hiring. So we had good traction. That's a lot of times why you didn't see me on a Tuesday morning, because I was camped out in other parts of the state promoting work here. So we had some nice activity as a result of that. Really based on a conversation I had with Ag Leader in the fall. Ron and I were there on an existing industry visit, and we heard them talk about a virtual career fair and the need for engineers with experience, how we can capture engineers right out of Iowa State, but we really need seasonal engineers. So we took that conversation, and we've been participating in some virtual career fairs with the largest virtual career fair company. It's called Echo, or Career Echo is what it's called. So we did our first one of those in January, and that was on engineering and sustainability. And then in March, we did just an engineering one. And then last week, I participated in the Big Ten. And so it really is more of a Midwest flair, because if I do search on the job seekers, we've been at Iowa Staters that participated in that virtual career fair. As a result of that virtual career fair, in a period of 5 hours, I can only, my fingers only move so fast to try to chat with these people. But we collected resumes. We get the full listing of registered participants. There were 3,300 people registered. And so each one of them got a message about Work at Ames. And so that's really in 1 week why we saw the jump. I'm convinced of it. Just the exposure of that virtual career fair in terms of people that are interested in seeing something. So those are they're cheaper than going and making college visits to Indiana and Rutgers. But still, they are providing some leads that we'll follow up with in our offices, and more importantly, leads for our workforce sponsors that have these really skilled technical opportunities. So we'll in the next month or so, there isn't one that I think is a good match for us, but we continue to watch that and seize those opportunities. And so I've called Dan in and the other staff because it's a very interesting experience to chat with these people all over the world that are wanting to talk to you about work. So there's a lot of engineers out there. And the thing I would say is we've got some great companies that they're interested in, very interested. They know us because of Iowa State University. And so it's fun to talk up those things. We do have some out-of-state activities planned coming into summer. Denver is the third largest alumni chapter for Iowa State, so we'll be hosting an event and utilizing some of the benefits we have available through our membership with the Alumni Association to target folks to get them to kind of an exclusive event where our employers can talk to them. Again, looking for skilled, experienced IT engineering sort of folks. And then we're planning and discussing a Twin Cities and Chicago trip. So those are ahead of us as we move into the rest of 2018. It's the time of year where we're talking about internship program. Our theme for this year is North, South, East, West. See yourself in Ames. We have four events, dates scheduled. I'm so excited that it's April. We have dates on the calendar. And really by the end of the day, we will have our speakers finalized, and we will be meeting with our sponsors on Friday to make sure they're comfortable with our plans. I would note on June 26th, that day we're having a joint chamber and economic development meeting. We're going to be having that at the core facility and then adjourning right to a See Yourself in Ames event. And that also at that event, we have the interns from Des Moines invited. So it's going to be a fun event. We're very excited about the opportunity to pull that networking, not only just for the interns with each other, but with our boards and a chance. So again, put these dates on your calendar. We'll get them up on WebLink as soon as we get finalized the rest of the details. But we're pulling them off a campus and bringing them out to the corners of the community. And we'll also, again, I would stress, extending the invitation to our employers beyond Ames as well. Homebase Iowa, and I need to give a shout-out to Leanne and Brett. They've been great partners as we all sat down in the fall and said, hey, we need to be utilizing this tool. We applaud the state as they have really worked to intensify their efforts. So I see a resume that comes that's interested in Story County regardless of the type of work. We've received 90 of those through the end from September 1st to March 31st. We've sent an introduction email to 89. I must have got one bounce back and had a bad email. We've sent personal note cards, so we're very committed to a personal note from our office in 68. Not all of those folks give us a physical address. You wonder why we're not at 100%. We have kind of a neat video and email that goes out to everybody. Some folks actually end up through the system twice, so I wonder why we sent 95 and only had 90. So if you end up, we don't catch them before they go out. Leanne also sends out a handwritten note. Her handwriting's much better than mine, I might add. But so she has sent out 67 of those when I last got numbers from her. I know some of you have seen our Smart Choice, very snazzy relocation guide. And I think it was Dan that suggested, hey, why aren't we sending these out to more people? So we've added a step in the process, and now we're sending out a note and that guide to our Homebase Iowa folks. So it's a very professionally done piece, and it's good to get those out and utilized. And a number two I'm tracking is that we're up to 120 Homebase Iowa employers. And I apologize, I don't know exactly where you started. I pulled that from the state site, but we'll continue to update that as we go out. We add that to our comment. It takes a few seconds now to be a Homebase Iowa employer. So we're excited that people want to come here. It's great to see our local incentives utilized, and it's an important tool that we need to be using. Any questions on Homebase Iowa? I'll talk a little bit about K-12 engagement. Scale is 24 participants from 5 districts and 4 tracks this spring. Ames Business Engagement Collaborative is up to 23 participants and 37 businesses. That's a year-long program, you might remember, so they track their numbers yearly. And I would be remiss if I didn't report on the Career Academy. So the Career Academy is our high school students that aren't participating in those other programs. And from the districts in Story County, that's 202 students. And I don't know if you had a chance to see this visual. It's actually in our annual report, and I think it summarizes our activities. It's hard to really put into words exactly some of the things that we're trying to do to support the rural communities under 2000, but I think this is a really interesting visual that Andrea and her team put together to represent what we're trying to do in terms of support. A little bit on statistics for as it relates to connections. I report connections here like I do visits. So 71 community connections, so a dialogue with a city clerk, a mayor, council person, a business person. We generally count those every day. At the end of the day, I kind of just do a tally a little bit in terms of, Dan will tell you I'm fanatical on measuring a lot of things. So years of reporting to an economic development board that needed stuff to be able to tell their constituents. But number of face-to-face visits, 19. actually had 9 project meetings, so whether that be housing or that be a business expansion or somebody that wants to go into a storefront. So those are fun meetings. I've been able to join you 7 times, and we've attended 5 city council meetings. Now, I've been busy in April, so that number will grow.
Oh, so you missed the last couple fun ones, fun city council meetings?
I don't know which fun ones you're talking about. I don't go to the Ames City Council meeting. I went once for Leadership Ames, but so some highlights that that I would like to point out. I'm sure I'm leaving some stuff off, and you all can add to those lists. But these are just some things that came to mind as I was putting our presentation together. It's been good. Roland had sold their lots, and it's been great to be able to help the 3 companies there that needed some additional assistance in trying to get their projects moved forward. So I anticipate, hopefully, we got a building ordered and some site work being done, and be fun to celebrate that with that community when we get one of those buildings up. I think you've all heard the great news about Zeering, and that started really, I got to give a shout out to Abby, who was in Story City. She was the one who texted me from some conference that we need to talk about Zeering and 100,000 opportunities. So we were able to assist them in getting to that point. And it was fun to see them on the list of very few people that got those funds. Colo, every day we go by there, and every one of us that travels Highway 30 gets to watch the activity going on there. We were helpful, I think, to Collins and Gilbert and the Ballard Ministerial Association to ensure that we did get some of the housing trust funds out and that we could hold their hands a bit to get through those applications. So that's good news. And I heard from the mayor in Collins today. I think he's got his first applicant. So we're very excited. Collins also was awarded some tax credits to move forward on their infill housing. Probably the last application approved before that program was shut down because they were out of funds or out of tax credits. So Brett is going to be starting that house here as soon as the weather gets to a point that he can proceed. So he's got funding ready to go and is excited to get started. So we all had a chance to celebrate with the former mayor down in Cambridge as he's opened his town center. And Maxwell has done some heavy reaching on a new housing subdivision. It's going to be fun to watch if incentives do make a difference in driving volumes quickly against a Des Moines and Ankeny market. And finally, as it ties to you all, because of your approval in supporting the Landis project, something that's been very near and dear to Collins, and every time I'm there, I hear about it, how they can't buy gas in their community. But because of the Landis project and what we anticipate in traffic, that pushed the viability of the gas station over in Collins. And so Collins has done what they need to do to support the project. The project had some local incentive requests that they wanted, and they did approve those. And hopefully, here soon, as well as soon as the weather clears up, we'll see some ground moving on that project. This is how it's supposed to work, right? And one thing leads to the next, so we're very excited about that. And finally, here's just a couple pictures. I love, we talk about it at our staff meetings, that Colo, when Voltmer Electric announced they wanted to put a building up in Colo, who knew that maybe they'd get 3 buildings on that site, which I love. they look and say, sure, come in, fill out a building permit, we'll make it happen. So that's why it's good to have diversity in the type of property we can promote to companies in our marketing efforts, because it just works there. They were willing to stretch. And so Colo's actually going to have a 3rd building starting soon. I'll be at the council meeting tonight to talk about reuse of the building where this company is leaving so they can move to a new building out in the Colo Industrial Park. And great picture of the Zeering property actually taken by my friend Abby. So it'll be fun to watch the transformation.
I'm excited to see the before and after.
Yep, so like I said, we're just glad to assist. This is fun stuff for us. We do talk about it. We stir our smaller communities into our conversation, and we appreciate you letting us be a part of it. Anything on your end?
Perfect. Kind of a fascinating time that we are here at Story Academy. So I think I'd go back, Dan, and talk about 2013 when Story County decided we were going to go down this road of trying to really get heavily invested in economic development workforce in the county, and how nothing like that existed. I think there were many, many people who opposed even the concept, and just to see where we were then and where we've gone now, what's happening. And now with the addition of your services to Nevada, I believe that means that we've got the whole county being served in some way, shape, or form by the ADC. We got Mark Jackson here. I know that they use the ADC on project-specific kind of mm-hmm. things, and Huxley a little more than that, but then full service in Nevada and the rest of the county, and, of course, the outstanding work that you guys do in Ames. Pretty good time to be in Story County when it comes to, you know, what the economic development future looks like, and so appreciative for the work that you guys do. Yep. Questions or comments?
I, in time, 2 years, heard grumbling early on as to why the county was expending dollars to a portion for a position. And I can tell you in a year's time, traveling the county with Brenda, where I, at this time last year, was doing the introductions, now I'm just the guy they don't talk to anymore. They go right to her. But, Dan, I appreciate what your organization did. I sat on the NEDC. It was a very slow walk, and it was very reasoned and considered. I think that in Nevada, it will be well served to have the alliance with the AEDC, and I look forward to the success it brings.
Thank you. We hope so, too. You know, it's interesting that they want to talk to Brenda, maybe rather than you anymore, because Drew Camp started this process and did a great job for us, got us to a great spot. Brenda's elevated it exponentially, in part because she goes to the community festivals and the fish fry in Cambridge a couple weeks ago. It wasn't a fish fry, it was a dinner. But because I said, I texted her and said, I'm in Cambridge tonight. But the point why that's important is that she's developed a high level of trust with people that she can deliver on what she's saying. And so as she goes to those meetings and as she moves around the county, it's really helpful in adding credence to this contract and why this is important, because there's meaningful and significant work being done that we can point to. You know, the $100,000 grant for the Zerion, the building of the Zerion, is incredible. And Brenda won't tell you this, but Brenda had an awful lot to do with that in that process. And so it really, it is a good time to be here. And as we continue to look at our economy evolving, whether it's workforce or it's adding new industry or adding new businesses, the biggest challenge we have right now is people. We all know that. And so we need Zerion and we need every corner of this county to be vibrant. And the way we do that is by investing in amenities and in infrastructure, much like Julie Weeks talked about a moment ago, and connecting our trails and promoting our trails in Story County. That's a livability component that we can't underscore enough. And so as we move forward, I often say we're as involved in community development as we are economic development, maybe more so today than ever, because livability and quality of life and amenities and infrastructure that supports people and gives people a reason to say yes to living here rather than someplace else is critically important. So as you've all said this morning, we're all in this together, and we appreciate the partnership.
Absolutely.
So thank you.
So before you get away, Dan, can you give us a one-minute update on any activity at all in Prairie View or in the research park or anything, and not necessarily asking for specifics, but what are you seeing in those areas?
So there's a nice project opportunity we're working on with the research park folks right now that I'll announce in the next 60 to 90 days. That we're pretty excited about, and there's some other smaller things going on right now that are quietly just happening. And they're not really secret; they're just happening. There's leases being signed, and people are moving around the research park right now. So the park is thriving. Prairie View, the city of Ames is intending to deploy the infrastructure this year. We don't know if that's June 1st or it's November 1st. We know it's this year. What's really, really interesting, and I shared this with the executive board of the ADC last Friday morning, John Hall and I were in Atlanta last week for 36 hours and Greenville, South Carolina. And the reason we were in those two places is that's kind of a hotbed for site selection consultants across the country. They're in Chicago, too, but there's a large concentration of those folks in Atlanta and in Greenville. And interestingly enough, we got really good validation on Prairie View Industrial Center. You know, like any project in any place, there's always people that say, well, you know what, that's sheer speculation. Colhane doesn't know what he's talking about. The city of Ames, I can't believe they're spending this money. But what we heard time and again was what a viable location this was given the rail infrastructure, Interstate 35, U.S. Highway 30, and in the future of grade separation on 30. All those things coming together in the shadows of a Tier 1 research institution. The best comment I heard, and then I'll stop, was we had breakfast with a woman from Global Location Strategies. It was formerly Fluor Daniel. Fluor is a very large international contractor and engineering consulting firm based in Greenville. And they spun out their site selection organization about 10 years ago, Global Location Strategies. Dee Dee Caldwell is the woman's name. We were having breakfast with her, and she said, this site right here, and she was pointing to a particular site in Prairie View. She said, this is the Holy Grail site for a lot of the things we do. And then she amplified why, based upon the capacity of natural gas, the electric capacity, of course, the rail, and all the other things I've already mentioned. And so while we didn't take that to the bank, say, oh, we've got a project for sure with this woman, it was validation, and it lent credibility to the fact that, for the most part, we thought we were talking about the whole time, but it added a lot of validity to what we've been saying for years and years and years, that if we deploy the infrastructure, if we annex this, if we develop this properly, this is a great, very viable location for the project she was talking about would be over $1 billion in investment. And this was hypothetical. We were talking hypothetically about the parameters of this site, why it would make sense. But she used the term Holy Grail. I haven't heard Holy Grail since I watched Monty Python in high school. So I'll stop there. Thank you for your partnership. And please, please, Lois.
I just want to bring it back to the local level again. I have been very, very impressed with Brenda's knowledge and skills. And obviously, it's from her background. But she really does get out there and know what she's doing, follows through. I'm amazed she gets any sleep some nights, okay, or days. But I just want to let you know that the service she's providing is, I think we're getting quite a deal. Don't send another bill. But I just want you to know that.
You're opening the door, Lois. one last thing I'd add to that point. Thank you. Those are very kind words, and they're well deserved, Brenda. Brenda talks a lot about analytics and a lot of the data and a lot of the numbers, and she gives me a report every month. Well, much to maybe the chagrin of the rest of our team, they all give reports now monthly, too, based upon Brenda's A-plus work. So Brenda's brought a lot more order to the things that we measure every month.
I never used to appreciate those people that change the curve.
Yeah, right.
That's Brenda Dreyer.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Consideration of minutes for the 10th and then the two canvases we did on both the 10th and the 12th.
As presented.
Second.
Motion to second. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Personnel actions as listed, board.
Move us to dinner.
Second.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda. Claims for April 19th.
Move approval.
Second.
Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda.
Move as presented.
Good.
Second. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing item today, we have first consideration of Ordinance 270, certain boundaries of the official zoning map, and we're talking about Alluvial and Prairie Moon.
Yes, we are.
Amelia.
How are you guys?
We're good.
Good. Well, I get this pulled up here. Just a note, as you know, we're going through the classification process right now, and so to avoid the repeal of this ordinance with the adoption of our code of ordinances, we have reached out to the county attorney on a few different recommendations for practices to follow. And on the second hearing, if action is needed to follow those recommendations, we will let you know. With that, again, this is for Alluvial. It's proposed rezoning from the A1 agricultural district to the A2 agribusiness district. Prairie Moon is already zoned A2 agribusiness. And the A2 Agribusiness District permits storage, retail, or wholesale marketing or processing of agricultural products into value-added agricultural products, which would allow distribution of their products. This is a 40-acre property that's being proposed to be rezoned. It was in agricultural production until 2012. Prairie Moon was established before the brewery that is currently on the property. Prairie Moon was actually rezoned to agribusiness in 1992. There were some conditions on that rezoning, including screening and landscaping for the residential area to the south. On the subject property where the brewery is located, there was a farmstead there, or farm store, excuse me, previous to the brewery where they sold produce from an organic farm. Then that was converted through a conditional use permit to the existing brewery. The applicant has invested in prairie, in conserving the agricultural land as prairie and wetland. The prairie and wetland you'll see here on an aerial image make up the majority of the site, but there are several other structures on the site, including the current tap room and an accessory structure where the brewing equipment is being moved. And then the recent expansion that was approved by the Board of Adjustment in January allowed for them to move the brewing equipment from the existing tap room to an accessory structure in the north to create more room, increase the capacity of brewing. But again, that was through a conditional use permit. And so here's a site plan from that conditional use permit. This is the existing brewery. Here's where the equipment is being moved. So the rezoning is for this quarter, this 40 acres here. And you can see the rest of the site is prairie. And then here is the organic farm. The winery is located here to the west. And these are the vineyards. So the proposal is, again, to rezone to the A2 district to permit distribution. During the process of permitting the expansion of the brewery, staff was informed that distribution was occurring, and we determined that that couldn't be permitted through the agritourism conditional use permit or in the existing zoning district. So there was a condition placed on the permit for the expansion that a text amendment was submitted. However, in further meetings with the applicant, we determined that the rezoning would actually be more appropriate than amending our agritourism ordinance, which we just went through an amendment to. And so here are some of the permitted uses in the A2 district. The two I really want to point out are that agricultural crop and livestock production are still a principal permitted use in the district, but storage, retail, wholesale marketing, and processing of agricultural products, which is what would allow distribution, is also a principal permitted use. The applicant currently maintains a limited distribution to 4 or 5 accounts in Des Moines. Distribution occurs in a cargo van about every other week. And the point of distribution is to reach a new customer base and have them then visit the brewery. So it's not semi-truck all the time. It's pretty limited, and that's the applicant's goal here. This is the Ames Urban Fringe Plan Land Use Designation map. Here is the subject property. It is agriculture and farm service. You can see there are some residential designations here to the south, and there's a natural area designation as well. This is the zoning and subdivision map. I've labeled it because the colors are a little funky. So this is Prairie Moon, this A2 rectangle. So this is the agribusiness area. This parcel in between is the vineyards and the parking area. And then you have the subject property, which you know is zoned A1 currently. But there's also residential areas. There's 3 parcels and 2 dwellings directly to the south of the subject property. And then you have the Squaw Valley subdivision to the southwest. So this is looking at the existing brewery. This is looking west on West 90th, and looking east. And this is the prairie. And this is looking at the patio area. This is the shared parking area with the winery and some of the winery buildings you can see back here. This is the interior. This is the brewing equipment that's being moved to the new accessory structure. This is the accessory structure. This is the farm. So there's 3 main standards of approval that we'll be looking at for this rezoning. The first is that it conforms to our county development plan, which in this case is the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. And that plan contains several principles for the Ag Farm Service designation that point to the need to have industrial and commercial land uses in proximity to agricultural uses. because those uses can enhance and are essential to the continued feasibility of farming in Story County. Further, our principle is to strategically locate industrial and commercial land uses in the Ag Farm Service designation to utilize adequate access and road capacity, support the continued use of these areas for farming, and allow the clustering of agricultural-related development. So you'll see that these principles are met by the rezoning because we are allowing the site to continue to be in conservation use or agricultural use. That's the intent here. The distribution will be limited, and we are clustering with another A2 agribusiness property, Prairie Moon. Further, in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan Joint and Cooperative Agreement, the county has committed to using conditional rezoning agreements when rezoning the A2 districts. Because of the growth in the agribusiness and agri-technology industries, there is the potential for incompatibilities in the future. And so we have agreed to use conditional rezoning agreements to limit more industrial uses. This is especially important with the residential area nearby. So we're proposing all uses be permitted except anhydrous ammonia storage, fertilizer and agricultural chemical and seed sales, liquid grain elevators, liquid propane storage tanks. And then finally, the storage, retail, and wholesale marketing or processing if it is not incidental to agritourism or on-site agricultural production. The second standard is that it is in conformance with the statement of intent for the A2 agricultural district. Again, the A2 district, similar to the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, points to the strong interrelation of agricultural uses with agribusiness uses, and the need to locate these uses nearby each other, specifically that the A2 district should be surrounded, when possible, by the A1 district. So we do have three parcels to the south that are zoned R1, two dwellings, but the majority of the southern property line is A1 agriculturally zoned, as are the rest of the adjacent properties. Again, we've gone through some of these points already, but the distribution use will be accessory to the main agriculture and conservation uses on the site. And there is screening already on the site to the south of those residential uses. Third, the proposed rezoning shall be compatible with surrounding land uses and development patterns. Again, you have A2 zoning with Prairie Moon. There is some residential zoning, but there is adequate screening there. And with the conditional rezoning agreement, we feel that that also provides compatibility with those residential land uses. When we went through the modification process for the conditional use permit for alluvial expansion in January, we received 10 letters of support from residents of the area. This activity, this distribution was occurring then. There's no real changes proposed. This is, again, going through the proposed conditional rezoning agreement. So comments from the public. We've published twice for the Planning and Zoning Commission in this meeting. We sent notice letters for this meeting and the Planning and Zoning Commission, and we placed a sign on the property. We did have one neighbor call just for more information, but have received no other comments. We also routed notice to cities within the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, and Ames just noted the need for a conditional rezoning agreement for the agribusiness designation to be in conformance with the Fringe Plan. So the Planning and Zoning Commission at their April 4th meeting recommended conditional approval. The commission did ask for clarification on a few different points. One is if an agritourism conditional use permit would still be required, yes. Another is if in the future, if new buildings were proposed, a site plan would be required. Yes, it would. Or, again, another modification to the conditional use permit. They also asked for clarification on if the conditional rezoning would apply to future landowners, if it was, it would run with the lands. So this was their recommendation, again, with the conditions limiting the uses permitted. So that would be alternative two, which is to approve the proposed zoning map amendment from the A1 to the A2 agribusiness district for the subject property as put forth with conditions on first consideration and set the second consideration for April 24th. Any questions?
Super. Questions for Amelia before we open the public hearing?
No, I just want to once again say thank you for a very clear report about what has happened, what you want to have happen, and even what would be happening in the future or not happening in the future. So thank you.
And the applicant is here as well.
One question, is it A ranch or I ranch?
That would be a good question for the applicant.
What is that?
I never mentioned.
Thank you.
Okay. That's why I went with alluvial. All right, if there's no further questions, we'll open the public hearing and ask if there is anyone, including the applicant, who'd like to address us. Seeing no one moving the microphone, turn to the board for action.
This is the natural progression of a successful business. So I enjoy what we do out there. We just had a wonderful kind of conservation volunteer event on Thursday night. I move approval of the first consideration of Ordinance 270 and Alternate 2 as presented with conditions, and I move our second consideration for Tuesday, April 24th.
I will second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Amelia, good job.
Good job.
Chidi?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. 270 passes. First reading. We'll do second reading next Tuesday. Thank you very much. That's it for public hearing items. Board, if there's not objection, I would propose moving item number 9, which is discussion and consideration of P3 campus software, to now, leading us off on additional items just so we can get Barry and the sheriff back over in just a second. Any objection to that?
No.
Okay. So we'll deal with that one first. Discussion and consideration of service agreement between P3 campus software and Story County.
Good morning,
gentlemen.
Good morning. Thanks, first of all, for moving us up.
Yes.
Connie said come over to 11, that you guys said that might be close, and it wasn't.
Oh, my God, it's 11:09.
Well, yeah. Only because you guys are kind to us, so. Well, we won't take a much of your time, but we did want to come today for your consideration. As you guys all well know, Sheriff Fitzgerald's top priority is the safety and security of the kids of Story County. In our discussions internally, we were asking how can we do better for our kids. And one of the things that we came across was the potential to have the kids have a reporting system so that if they come across anything that is suspicious or concerning to them, that they would have an outlet in order to let law enforcement know. And as we talked internally, we knew that it was important for that mechanism to be anonymous. And so we started doing some research on the different groups that were out there that would offer services like this. And eventually we came to P3 Campus, which is the group that we brought to you guys today. And what they've asked for us to do is it's kind of unique. On their website, if you choose to do business with them, they have a button on their website that says you agree to their terms of service. And then they invoice you, so there's no contract in place. And so they have sent us an invoice for $2,800, which is a $2,300 fee for the service itself and the $500 setup fee, which will be a one-time only fee. And so we have that in front of you guys today for consideration. We sent you the terms of service. The county attorney's office has had a chance to look it over. But just to let you guys know, this will give the capability for all approximately 11,500 students K-12 in Story County to have an outlet to anonymously let us know if there's something going on. So, you guys have any questions for us?
Yeah, I would say so appreciative, Sheriff and Barry both, that this is a focus. It's a necessary, sadly, in our world today, it's a necessary focus. And I think giving our young people a reasonable, anonymous outlet where you guys get to filter through and decide what's credible, what's actionable, and what's not. I'd much rather have more information than we really need than not enough. So I'm just appreciative. Loris Marty, questions or comments?
Thank you, Barry, for filling in the missing dots for me this morning, because I read the whole 10 pages of the contract. And since it didn't say what it was for specifically in the dollar amount, I'm like, what am I missing here? Is there a piece missing, et cetera? So Barry filled it in this morning, and that was helpful. And it is interesting. We don't have a contract. Instead, just a service agreement. So with that, I would move. Well, I'm sorry. Maybe Marty wants to make a comment first. But
done.
Okay. I would move. Okay. I would move that we approve this for the P3 campus software by Anderson Software in the amount of $2,800 for the fiscal year, or for April 18th, 18 through April 17th of 19.
As the motion second, and just for clarification, we're also in essence agreeing to continuing that at $2,300 plus any increases they might have as we go into the future. So just everybody be aware
of
that.
Would you like to?
No, I think it's fine. I just wanted to make sure it was on the record. Anything further? Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Passes. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
We'll wait 13 whole minutes.
Yeah, well, thanks for getting us forward. And also, to Rick, to your point about, you know, we hate to have some of these conversations, but we're having them. I sent all you guys also the media release that we will be doing a public safety forum tomorrow night in Gilbert in partnership with the school district. You guys are invited to attend. Anybody from the public's invited to attend so that we can just help get the word out there about the things we're doing and keeping those kids safe. So,
outstanding.
Right.
I have
a question related to it here. It's kind of related to my confusion, Dad, as I read through the contract or whatever. Is there some way that we would be able to notify, like, when this comes in to the public also, you know, because this is the permanent record, about kind of what we are doing here, that a little memo would come forward or some kind of note or forwarding of an email that we could match up so we know what the terms of agreement are about, why, and what's happening here?
So just to clarify then, are you saying moving forward, can we have
have
a follow-up as to how it's going? And
no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I didn't make myself clear.
If you're talking budgeting, this is something we would just include in the Sheriff's Office annual budget.
Right.
I'm not explaining myself well,
so let me give it another shot here.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw that what we've got on the agenda specifically list the software and list the amount and list the terms, okay? But then the attachment has nothing. It refers to a term yearly, but other than that, there's no explanation how, for me, and I think there for the public, about how this attachment applies to the actual agenda description, the item of description. So I was wondering if there was a way to get a note, a one-paragraph note, that would come with the actual service agreement as a separate, it would be a separate attachment that would say, conservation does them, they're called urge memos, is what the conservation does.
Sure.
Says, we ask that you please approve this, this is for this, the reason there's no contract is because instead, this is how the vendor works it. And then everybody would know what was going on.
Sure, so let me start and then, okay. And then you come. So this is kind of a unique circumstance. Let's just be really clear. Statutorily, the sheriff does exactly what the sheriff thinks needs to happen to protect the people of Story County.
Right.
No, in a normal situation, if we didn't have this convoluted check the box and that obligates Story County to these things, normally the sheriff would just enter into this agreement, pay the $2,300, and we'd be good to go.
Right.
We were just concerned that with this check the box binding Story County, some of the issues we've had over the last few years, that the board needs to take that action. So this is Lawrence, I think your point is well taken. I think it's beneficial to everybody concerned if occasionally the sheriff will update the board on what's going on. These are the things we're doing to protect the people of Story County, in this case, the young people of Story County, and go. This is really, in my mind, overkill that we needed to do this today, but we did because now we bind Story County to all of it, and so I don't see a scenario like this very often coming out of the sheriff. Normally, the sheriff makes the decision, this is what needs to happen for the sheriff's office, and it happens,
right.
And the only time we really get involved is when we're setting the budget or if there's some kind of contract that binds Story County. This one's a little convoluted of you check a box, and what does that do to Story County?
Right.
And so we were erring on the side of caution in doing it this way.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I'll just look to see if we have anything and get back to you later.
Okay. I actually very sent at this point. There is an email, and then there's also he sent the invoice to me, and I can forward that to Shelley for inclusion in the, she looks like, I don't want this. But anyway, that's why I got confused.
Well, so as far as paying for it, all that's included in our claims.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And
I
so I don't think we want to go down a road of including every one of our claims in one of our agendas.
I think there's a quote that Connie has attached.
Yeah, that's
I'll
what
put that
quote.
In there.
Yeah.
That'll
make
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Outstanding. All right, now back to number one on additional items, consideration of project sponsor acknowledgement between Iowa State University, SciBiz, and Story County Conservation. Actually, it's two different contracts, three different projects, if you will, that we had on last week's agenda. Mike, you weren't able to be here. I'm glad you're feeling better.
Yeah.
And we wanted to make sure we had an opportunity to fully discuss these.
Sure, thank you. I tell you what, there seems to be a theme for this morning's meeting.
What?
And that is quality of life and economic development. seems apropos to maybe replay some of Nancy's comments, some of Mark's comments, some of Brenda's comments, and some of Dan's comments in relation to these two items that we have in front of you. As you're all aware, the Story County Conservation Board is charged with, if you will, improving not only our natural resources but our quality of life and getting people engaged in outside. And when we improve quality of life, I think we know what one of the things that happens when that happens, and that is increased population. And when we have more, I mean, Brenda's figures this morning on our unemployment are incredible. We know people want to be here. We know that we continue to have a rural-urban migration, and Story County is on the receiving end of that, in addition to other large counties in Iowa. So we know that when we have those and when we improve our quality of life, that we get more economic activity. Economic activity and return on investment are critical for leveraging funds and understanding the efficiency and effectiveness of those improvements on quality of life and our economic engines. These projects are, three, if you will, Rick, two in this first action item here, and that's the partnership with the SciBiz lab to do an economic analysis on Hickory Grove Lake and Dakins Lake are critical as we move forward in making some funding decisions and assigning some resources to different projects. Right now, we have anecdotal data that we've relied on and for projects, one being a statewide economic development study that was done by the university a number of years ago, last updated in 2012, and they looked at not only state facilities, i.e. state parks and recreation areas, but also some county parks throughout the state, and made some extrapolations on economic benefit. We also have studies done by the Department of Natural Resources on through their lakes evaluation project, and we use that figure. We use that specifically for Hickory. And again, that's an extrapolation from their data. Recently, we've partnered with the DNR to invest in a creel. It's called Creel Survey at Hickory Grove, and that is kind of a survey to measure angler satisfaction, angler success, but also the economic impacts of that. So our creel clerks that are out there are asking those kind of similar questions. What we're proposing to do here with SciBiz is something that lab did quite effectively a few months ago for the High Trestle Trail and did an analysis of the economic impact of that trail on Central Iowa. And so they're successful with this kind of thing. ideas is use the students to do this under the leadership of their excellent faculty and staff in the program, and so I have utmost confidence in their ability to do it. What it really does is allow us to make more accurate local decisions, not based on extrapolated statewide numbers for these facilities, but based on real numbers that are specific to those facilities, namely Hickory Grove Park and Dakin's Lake. So I think that it's apropos to consider them today. I'm glad you did move them so that I could be here and answer any questions you may have.
Yeah, and so I just think an outstanding idea to have not just generic extrapolated numbers, but specific numbers as they relate to these three major projects that we have here in Story County. So I appreciate you bringing it forward. Questions or comments for Mike?
Will the analysis of Dakin's include the placement of the cabin there? Because I think that would skew the numbers in a positive way if it were taken into account as you proposed it.
If I heard you right, you said, will it reflect the cabin?
Yes.
The proposed cabin?
Yes.
And yet will on a speculative basis.
Okay.
It will on that level.
All right.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Following up on the question about what it will and won't include, the timing on this is when we're draining Hickory Grove. So I'm wondering if that will be factored in on the impact of that.
It will, correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So I already had emailed Mike that I had a couple of questions about the contract itself, okay? One of them, I'm really glad to hear your explanation explaining who was going to do this through the class and also acknowledging that the Iowa survey that was done a few years ago, and then we've been extrapolating, because I've always kind of questioned how accurate the numbers are, so I'm thrilled to see this. I have a question about, as we check the appropriate boxes on these contracts, it talks about confidential information. And I would like the information that SciViz gathers to be available to everyone. And I'm thinking that, though, that you're out, and I assume they will be interviewing some businesses, especially when you talk about Dakin's Lake and, you know, what is that economic impact since Manly's was open and then closed, and, you know, what other kind of businesses are there really in Deering, et cetera. So have you discussed this with SciViz about confidentiality, about do they find that private businesses are willing to share the information?
Yes, we have had this discussion. I think the genesis of these series of check marks, check boxes, is are we providing ISU any confidential material that
right.
they have to maintain confidentiality of?
Right.
And the answer is no.
Right. I didn't read it that it was asking us to maintain anything confidential. They just said, are they allowed to share all the information we give them with anybody? And you said, yeah, well, I'm not going to share anything with you that you can't share with anybody else.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Correct.
All right. Great. Well, that was my question. Okay. Then the other one was, will we retain the ownership rights to this survey then?
Yes, we will.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Outstanding. Good. Any other questions?
No, I believe this is worthy.
All right.
And I have no questions, and I would... this is a motion, okay?
Yep.
I would make a motion that we adopt the SciViz Labs in regards to a economic development analysis of Dakin's Lake and Hickory Grove, effective 4/12/18 to 8/20/19 for $10,000 as presented.
Now I'll second it.
Motion. This is specifically for Hickory Grove and Dakin's. Mm-hmm. Further discussion.
None.
Gee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Hickory Grove and Dakin's pass. The reason we got a separate one for Tedesco is paying for it through the project cost. So this was something that we talked about originally when we started Tedesco as part of the project. We wanted to do some kind of economic impact analysis. At that point, we didn't know it was going to be SciViz that would serve us as a a natural fit for us, but it will come out of project dollars as we do the build-out of Tedesco. It's a little different than Hickory Grove and Davis. Any questions on it, or is there a motion?
I'll move that we approve the sponsor acknowledgement between ISU SciDiz Labs and Story County Conservation Board for the TELC economic impact analysis effective April of 2018 through August of 2019 for $5,000.
Second. Motion and a second. Further discussion?
None.
Olson?
Aye.
Cheney?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Both of those pass. Now we're talking about the $200 for the wayfinding signage. That was on last week. We pulled simply, there's some contract dates. Clear that up for us, Mike.
Yeah, so we, as you all know, we regularly work with the university on a number of different levels and think that that's just good practice for us. And there's a symbiotic relationship there. One of the things was we know that the Conservation Board is knows that we need to do some wayfinding signage in some of our parks. And we also know that there's a university group that has some experience in designing and has curriculum around designing wayfinding signage. What kind of messages should go where, et cetera. And so we reached out to them to engage them and get their support in moving forward with this. And so we started that, and then after we started, we realized and we were told that, well, the class needed to have an agreement. And so work has already started, and then we find out, well, there's an agreement is needed. And so now we are playing a little bit of catch-up because work has started. Nominal fee with this, $200, I think, supports a little bit of their, I'm not sure, supports a little bit of their gas money to get students to and from in university vans or exactly what it does, but a little bit of financial support for the group that's doing it.
And so when no agreement was needed, or when we thought no agreement was needed, it's a simple matter of $200, director approves that, away we go. Then all of a sudden we come back after the fact and are told there is an agreement needed, which is why the dates don't line up.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate the explanation. Just regardless of the dollar amount, I'm going to ask.
Sure. Yeah. No action needed here. Everybody good?
Good.
Mike, thank you very much. Glad you're back feeling better, man.
I feel better.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike.
Next is discussion consideration of board and commission appointments and service parameters. Deb Shildroth. So the way this came to us is, and let's start with this. This is not about any specific position, board, commission, anything like that. The way it was triggered is we did have a member of one of our boards who moved during their term outside of Story County. And so that triggered a question to Ethan Anderson, our civil attorney, of can this person continue on that board? We got word back that, in fact, they can. There was no requirement that it be a Story County resident. But as Deb and I were talking this through, we thought it would be good for this board to have an initial conversation as Deb starts to ramp up looking for applicants for our boards and commissions. And I think, Deb, you're planning on doing that maybe sometime in June, start to ramp that up, that we have a feel for if we have any additional parameters that we want to place on these positions regardless of what the code tells us. So that's our conversation today. Did I miss anything?
You didn't.
Okay.
No, well said, and good morning. So I went through and just looked up some of our boards and commissions, and most of them do have a residency requirement. So Board of Adjustment, Planning and Zoning Commission, Condemnation Commission, Compensation Commission, Civil Service. So I think it's been practiced over the years that we do look at Story County residents to serve in those capacities. And since the code is silent on a couple of them, do we want to look at having a requirement at the local level or at least maybe put that into place in terms of that's our kind of our first go-around is to look at who those individuals are and make sure they are county residents, depending on applicants, what direction does the board want to go with this. We do ask, too, that those where the residency requirement is silent, are there bylaws or policies that those particular boards or commissions have that might have a residency requirement. We did not see that. So that just kind of left it open. And
yep.
That's where we fall back on. Our practice has generally been to look for Story County residents to.
Well, and I would say even more than, at least in my 8 years sitting up here, there has not been a time that we've appointed somebody to a board or commission that was not a Story County resident. That said, some interesting points, and I'm going to use the Board of Health as the example here. So the Board of Health has some very specific requirements in terms of professions needed to be part of that board. And my fear is that if we limit, so let's say we got to have a physician as part of our Board of Health. So let's say we limit ourselves and we say it must be a physician who resides in Story County, and we find that we have real trouble identifying somebody there, I think we've tied our hands. For me, I believe that preference should always be given, and in most cases, greatly given, where not required, to those who live in Story County. But I can see where we need a little gray area. That said, this board, as Deb starts to go to work on soliciting those applications, this board needs to set what its parameters are so that we can go ahead and identify a really solid recommendation coming forward to the full board.
Well, I think, first of all, that there's an expectation out there among the residents that we will look for Story County residents. I've really thought a lot about this one and kind of struggled with it. And so as I was out and about on Thursday and Friday and a little bit Saturday, I asked people, what do you think about if there's no residency requirement? Should we allow someone to A, complete a term, or B, then be reappointed if they're not a resident? And so the feedback I got was almost overwhelmingly, if there's only a few months left to run on a term, and the person still has a connection to the county, let them serve out the term, but then that's it. I mean, I got the that's it was not a reappointment. So I feel that we need to keep it to a Story County resident, unless there's that example you gave, like with the physician on Board of Health. And then if we deflect to the policy we have in place for gender balance, is that don't we have a policy that we go 90 days to try and get applicants for gender balance on the board? And after 90 days, if we can't achieve that, we then can either further our outreach or decide to appoint someone of the, in this case, the opposite gender. Or, you know, so if we held that same policy, is that we start with when there is a specific condition, you know, a specific certification required or profession to fill a slot, we start with Story County residents, and then at the end of 90 days, if we can't find, then we widen our search then.
Okay. Thoughts, Marty?
I serve on the Board of Health, and this is where this all fell out of. Kristen is a very capable and wonderful person to serve on a board with, and she's only really just stepping across the line into Boone County, as a lot of what we consider Ames residents do, as Ames grows in that direction. It would kneecap the Board of Health greatly if she were to be removed, and her term does end in December. The coding does not speak to this. We have to give ourselves the latitude. I would be loath to put anything in place that would take away the opportunity for a future board to place somebody on there. Clearly, Iowa code does speak to residency requirements. This is not the case. My expectation is yours, Loris. It would have to be, I would start in Story County, and we would try to make the application. I don't believe that we've ever had a problem filling anything that I have not heard that anybody would say that, oh, we have to go outside of Story County to fill a board or commission membership. So I'm not looking to put anything that would, I'm not looking for anything that we would do as action that would fix a problem today that would be an impediment in the future.
Okay, so what I'm hearing, and let me just make sure that I heard correctly, is no appetite to remove somebody from an existing appointment as long as it's allowed by state code just because they leave the county, as long as they're willing and capable of still serving. And two, as we move forward, we want to give major preference to Story County residents. In fact, that's what we're seeking for all of our appointments, is Story County residents. And if there are extenuating circumstances beyond our control, then we will consider widening that net as appropriate. Is that what I'm hearing? Because that sounds to me like standard practice, and we'll just move forward with that.
Yes, you're hearing, except I would like to put it into a policy. That's the difference, maybe, I'm hearing from what Marty just said. I would like to put that as a policy going forward, so that there's not an expectation of people in the future about a reappointment if they do move. Okay, there's one thing, filling out an appointment if the state code doesn't say. But I would like to actually say we're going to go after Story County residents as an actual past policy, unless we can't fill it due to specific requirements by code. Because it's my understanding that she's not a physician, correct? I mean, this, I know we're not talking about this one. She's not named, right? And that's not required. So I'd like to keep us as consistent as possible and as close-knit as possible. So that's the difference.
Absolutely, but here's my problem with the policy. So this is this board's appointment. So we get to do whatever we see fit. We can set policies. We can ignore policies. We can do whatever it is we do. And what I've just heard is we got a general agreement in philosophy. We don't need a policy beyond that. We're moving. This board is moving ahead. Future boards may decide to go a different direction, and I think that's creating a policy for the sake of creating a policy, and that's not. We create policies so that others will adhere to the will of the board.
Mm-hmm.
We are the appointing body in this case, right? So
right.
We get to do what. And we never have to have a reason to appoint or not appoint. We do the best we can, and then we're held accountable for that.
Your point's taken. I was looking at the policy as more of a notification.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, I boil it down to the fact we're talking about Kristen's tenure on the board, which sunsets in December.
Right.
Does that need us to do anything differently than we're now doing? No. And the thing is, we're better served to keep her, knowing that this is the exception that didn't bring the conversation to both Deb to work on a research level to inform us, and then in turn for us to discuss and inform the public on where we're going. I think that we've always sought the pool of Story County applicants to fill our boards and commissions. That's not changing. That we take on a case-by-case basis. We have the ability, both this board, future boards, to do anything different at once. I think we're fine.
I
gotcha.
Okay. Good. All right. Just a couple of comments. Kudos to Story County citizens, because we do have a lot of interested individuals who are willing to serve in these capacities. So that's...
We are lucky in that respect.
Yes,
we do have to go looking in some respects for some of the boards and commissions.
And just, and the other comment is with regards to the gender balance, but that's a state law, and so we just follow that. There's not a specific written policy, but it's state law, so that's how we comply with that on all of our boards and commissions.
Deb, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next item is discussion consideration of NetApp storage array replacement. It's a special opportunity. You've got to act now. The quantities are limited. Can I find you the item?
Good morning.
Good morning, board. Barb Steinbach and Joel Ahrens, who's a server and storage expert. So if you have technical questions, he's here to address those. If you recall, in our CIP meetings, we built in the replacement of our storage device every 3 years, and this is budgeted for next year. Typically, we do purchase spindle storage devices, which have a better capacity, a little more expensive, but not as fast and not as stable. So an opportunity recently came up, as a matter of fact, the end of the year sale. It is an end of the year closeout, ends tomorrow. So we thought we'd bring this to the board to see if it would make sense to purchase the storage device this year as opposed to next year. And the reason for this is flash memory. Remember I said that we budgeted for spindle memory for next fiscal year. Flash memory is so much better, but from a practical standpoint, we don't always fill that into the budget because it's expensive. It's probably twice the cost of spindle. However, with this sale, they're offering us the opportunity to purchase it for almost the same cost as single memory. From a technical standpoint, it definitely makes sense, but it is unbudgeted. And it comes at a cost of about $75,000 with built-in first-year support. And what we found out the hard way with the spindle devices, I was trying to squeeze 5 years out of our last storage device, and unfortunately found out that after year four, the maintenance increases so much that it's less expensive to buy new than to pay maintenance on the old, and they do that for a reason. They want you to turn it over every several years. That's not the case with this flash memory, the flash storage. The costs for renewal and refresh are much lower, although it does come at initially a higher price. However, with this opportunity, it would be about the same as the spindle device.
So would we be paying $75,000 once and then a maintenance fee for the remainder of the term?
Well, this $75,000 plus the $3,000
would be, there was no amount.
Oh, I'm
sorry. We don't know what you're talking. We don't know the amount. Oh, thank you. Okay.
All right. So this it would be the total cost of $80,216, and the $75,000 would be almost $76,000 would be for the hardware itself, and then this quote always includes. They like to include the first year maintenance, so it doesn't come separately. So this would bring us up to a year from now before we have to pay maintenance costs again. Okay.
And it also includes $400 in shipping. So these are dollars that we budgeted for next year. We would be purchasing the equipment in this fiscal year.
Yes.
Your budget's looking pretty solid so far.
Yes.
What is your expectation? Have you visited with Lisa Markley about budget amendment for something like this? Or is maybe a budget amendment's not necessary for something like this?
I did give Lisa a heads up that we would be coming to the board with this request. It would require a budget amendment. We don't have enough in our hardware line due to the fact that we have to purchase a lot of PCs because Windows is going to retire Windows 7. And so we're going to have to, I know it never ends, so we're going to have to replace a huge amount of PCs. We're going to have to use every bit of our hardware line item.
Okay. So we either find this somewhere else in the IT budget, or we would have to go outside to pull some dollars in, Lisa.
I would include
that in that. So this is an expense in FY19 if we do this today as an unbudgeted expense in 18.
It'll be an expense in 18, an unbudgeted expense in 18, and it would mean that our budget for 19 will be, what do we put in, 72,000 or 75,000. It would be 75,000. We'll be 75,000 heavy as we start 2019.
And we get a better quality product.
Much.
Definitely. And this is, the user won't see a lot of it except when they're trying to load videos. What the flash does is it allows the searching to be faster.
Okay.
So if you're looking for something, it comes up faster and loads faster. It's just an improved experience for the user. It's not something that, you know, is night and day, but so that's why we've always tried to. And we do have mixed storage right now. We do have some flash and some spindle, but this would be all flash.
Okay.
If we have the dollars, Lisa says we can do this. Mm-hmm. I would propose that we move the NetApp storage array replacement special as presented as an unbudgeted expense of $75,000 in FY18.
Yeah, it's more. It's $80,000.
Yeah.
Approximately
$80,000.
I second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Thanks.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Next item is another purchase of an unbudgeted item, but this one we already discussed through part of the budgeting process. Joe, you want to come on up? Purchase of a combine for IRBM. Joe's been piecing it together with duct tape and bubble gum for a few years, and now we finally decided we're going to try to get one. You've identified one, and pricing looks pretty good, and you're urging us to go ahead and finally approve it.
Yeah, well, it's been discussion and consideration for a John Deere combine for the public that may be interested. It's been forthcoming for a few years. We've been harvesting seed since, I do believe, the beginning of Sword County Conservation back in the late 60s, whether it's been prairie seed or planting some trees. A lot of hand harvest back in the 80s and the 90s. We started doing it with mechanically with some pull-behind combines. I think you've seen them out there, the old Alice Chalmers. We're going to park them in Marty's yard. You can plant flowers.
I don't know what you're going to do with them, Joe.
Oh, no. A couple of them still run. So we you know, we don't... I would call them a flotilla because I just like to give them a Viking burial at times. But we have about three Alice Chalmers combines that that run on occasion. They were efficient and effective as far as when they're running, but it did take a lot of personnel or some time to get this going. So that's the history. Story County harvests about 300 to 400 usable pounds of seed, prairie seed a year, grasses and flowers. They go back on some of the properties that roadsides and our natural areas. And I've done quite a bit of research in the past few years, looking on websites and combines, waiting for that, putting energy into positive energy into finding that local combine that will fit for us, okay? Which means it has to have parts available. It has to be in good shape. In the area, so we don't have to truck it somewhere on a semi across the nation to get it here. And then I went and started talking to other conservation boards, the Iowa DNR, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and other private people that do harvesting. And this is the model that they recommend. And wow, it showed up in McCallsburg. With limited hours and a good price, it does come with a 13.5-foot bean head and a 4-row corn head, which we would probably not need to use, but his market is everyone I talked to wanted to buy it from us. So I am asking the board on behalf of Story County Conservation and our director, Mike Cox, to consider the purchase of a John Deere 4400 combine for $4,500.
Questions, comments, or a motion?
Well, Marty's laughing. Thank you for the tour last week. Tyler and Joe did a very thorough job of introducing me out there to their entire work area and their equipment. And I'll make a motion then that we purchase the combine, as described, the John Deere 1978 4400 for the amount of $4,500.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion?
Nice.
Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. You got a new combine there, Joe.
What are you going to do with the old ones, neighbor?
Well, probably the old ones need to go to the junk. The part ones need to get iron prices are going up a little bit, believe it or not. Well, maybe they went down. Well,
no.
And then the other ones we'll still keep for just two of them around in case something happens.
Good.
Two will go, two will stay.
Outstanding. Thank you, Joe. Next item is discussion consideration of consistent headshots for website and publications. Leanne Harder. So what we've got right now is we've got various sundry headshots for each of us. No real consistency in look or feel. And so Leanne asked if we could stick this on the agenda to discuss, and that's what we're doing.
Sorry.
Well, I can go sit down now.
I just tried to tee up. Only one.
I did come across a term this morning rather than headshots, personal branding.
Well, at least it's not a mugshot.
So I have one concern with all of this. We're not going to have any elected officials who will decline to get their photo, because we're elected officials. But we might have some department heads who are not comfortable with their image being used anywhere. What's our feeling on that?
My first question then is, do we have any department head who does not have a photo on their page right now? I see nods. Okay, so that is a...
Yeah, we got some that are, for whatever reason, they're not comfortable with their image being out there.
And the majority of the department heads that are there, I don't believe they're necessarily professionally done headshots. They're not bad images, but I don't think they're professionally done.
Yeah, so my feeling is simple. If we're going to put headshots on our webpage, our new webpage, new and improved webpage, they ought to be consistent. We ought to have a consistent feel from each of our headshots. It just makes sense to have it done. I'm also going to be really reticent if we force somebody who does not want their headshot on our website to put it on our website. That's my feeling. You guys get to decide what direction we go.
And it's a little bit more than just website, too. There's, as you well know, with our story, we've removed all the linked officials from the bottom just because it, when we needed the space last time. But
it was an easy choice.
The inconsistency just kind of was in your face with how the images...
Yeah, it's disjointed. It's disconcerting to see the string, and every one of them is just completely different.
But there might be some other, not to pick on Jerry, but maybe there's something beyond our website that he would need a headshot for.
Modeling career.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't want to force anyone either. I really don't want to force anyone. I do see Leanne's point, though, if there was an award presented, and at that point that employee would allow it to be released in association with that. So maybe the middle compromise is to take the shots, but give each one of the department heads the option of when it is used so that we're still getting a bulk if you don't need it, rather than all of a sudden somebody wins the national award and we've got them standing up against the wall.
I agree with you 1,000%. My question is this. If we happen to have a department head that absolutely does not want their photo taken, even taken, we gonna force them?
No.
Okay. Yeah. So my feeling is the happy medium is let's go ahead and have Leanne do the exploration, contact a couple of professional photographers, see what it would take to have a time where all of our elected officials and department heads are invited in to get the headshot. I'm with you. Then the department heads should get to decide how that headshot is utilized, whether it's on the website or not. I know how we're going to utilize ours, right? They're going to be beside our names in pretty much everything we do. But there's value for all of us having that consistency. There's value to Story County in having that consistency as we use those in our story or other publications to have a consistent thing.
And then the other thing would be, regardless whether it be a department head who elects to have the shot taken or it be the elected officials, to make sure we're not misusing public dollars, we could only use these particular headshots related to our association with the county. We could not use them.
If it's paid for by the county, you don't use it, utilize the image somewhere else.
Somewhere else.
Right.
I did just reach out to some local photographers, and I got anywhere from $65 for 20 to 30 minute sessions to $350 for three-hour session to $250. So I used Thumbtack too and got estimates, and those range from $200 to $500. So it's not overly. It's not the cost of senior pictures. I can say that.
Yeah, so I would suggest that we do it, if we're going to do it, we do it in conjunction with one of our department head and elected official staff meetings, which I think would allow us to minimize the amount of time that the photographer is here, and we just ask people to get here, 20 minutes early for the elected official and department head meeting, looking like they want to look for this photo, and then we take the photos, and Laura's to deal with your issue, I think. It's worth probably having the conversation if you or I want to sit down there and have a photo done for Story County and also have a photo done that we're going to use personally. We just need to pay for our personal photo that we take at the same time. Just got to come out of our pocket.
Sure. So,
thoughts or direction for Leanne?
I'm not moved either way on the glamour shot.
You're wearing the budget sweater for your hat.
Sorry that we would go to the expense, but we went to the expense to upgrade our website.
Yeah.
I like your thought of consistency as we are presented. I would encourage the department heads that you deal with the public anyway. Mm-hmm. I think that there's some modest expectation that maybe a familiar face is as they use our website that possibly here's who I'm going to go talk to or I've spoken to electronically or on the phone. They don't want to do it. I'm not going to push, but it would be nice. So I would move from what I have heard that we direct Leanne to reach out. I didn't know how I wanted to say this.
We want Leanne to gather more information on getting consistent headshots, work with Deb Shildroth on scheduling. Again, my suggestion would be schedule sometime when we're going to have everybody together anyway.
Department head meeting. Then that would be my motion that we direct Leanne and Deb to work in conjunction, find out the information we need to move to consistent county headshot overdress.
And I guess the only thing left, getting that more information, selecting the vendor might be a little bit of a, there could be a lot of people who contact Leanne now wanting to be the photographer. So do we want to give any parameters about a maximum amount to authorize so that some people who contact maybe above that amount and they're eliminated? I mean, I could easily think of probably 50 photographers who might want to go ahead and come.
And then I think the public as well, sir, because that would be more price dependent. I think we're just talking about taking,
Do you want her
to select the best deal that works with our schedule?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't think that's all.
Those are parameters.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Could you second? I will again just be sure.
Yep.
Okay.
Motion in a second for Leanne to work on this and figure it out. Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye.
Thank you, Leanne.
Thanks, Leanne. Good job.
Thank you.
Next is discussion and consideration of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan map, the north area. So, Jerry, we've been talking about this since you were hired.
Long time.
And it was a request that came out of, from the Board of Supervisors, actually the previous board, two previous boards ago, that made this request that it was time, with everything going on in the northern area, and specifically that northwest quadrant. But everything going on, everything changing since the Urban Fringe Plan was agreed to, that it was time to dig in and really look at that. Instead of going piece by piece, project by project, which is what we're doing now, really take a look at it and see what's changed. The entire area along North Dakota has changed from what it was originally intended in the Urban Fringe Plan map. And so this really originated with Story County and now has percolated up where Story County is the last one to approve doing. That's right. Gilbert and Ames have both dealt with this?
Well, this is the review that we did for that area between Ames and Gilbert. Our approach really was to come up with areas of opportunity that will involve the property owners. You have to have property owners' consent and interest, developers' interest. It'll depend on market conditions, and then ultimately, if a change needs to be made, we would have to get support with the other two partners, Ames and the City of Gilbert. So, again, these are areas of opportunity as things progress. We did sit down with Ames Planning and Housing staff and the City of Gilbert staff with the review that we did. Ames is going to be going through an update on their comprehensive plan. They're supposed to hire a consultant in the summer, and so they'll likely start on that in the fall. About 2 weeks after we did this review, the City of Gilbert provided a copy of their most recent comprehensive plan. So the information that we provided in here initially was from their previous comprehensive plan. Ames' staff's position on this information that we provided is that they want to reserve judgment until such time their comprehensive plan is completed. And the City of Gilbert staff is, their position, their posture is slow, controlled growth. They don't want to get ahead of their school district so that a lot of improvements would be needed. They do echo in the updated comprehensive plan information that's currently in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan for the area between 190th and 180th, which is referred to as the Story County Study Area. That specific study never took place. But there's a reference in there to keep the land use status quo, you know, not support a lot of changes other than agricultural uses and, you know, limited to development. So again, our focus was the Ames Urban Fringe land use framework map. We use that to determine, you know, what it, there's designations throughout the 2 mile area of the Ames Urban Fringe, so it guides our future land use decisions. We look at it when we get subdivision plats, site plans for commercial industrial development. It helps us to decide if a rezoning is going to be needed to make a change. And then ultimately, the policies in the plan dictate the role of the three entities in reviewing requests that we get. So some of the things that drove the interest, Rick, you hit on it, the construction of the Gilbert High School, the traffic on Hyde, Grant, Gretton, the paving that took place on Hyde. Last year, over half of our zoning permits for single-family homes were in this north area. And then the Ames sanitary sewer study drove that. So, you know, our focus was to look at stakeholders, the three entities, the resources that are provided in this north area. We try to focus on, you know, what their planning was. But again, as I said, our approach is to identify, like, existing developments that we have in the unincorporated area that could be continued, or adjacent parcels that potentially could be expanded. You know, as a starting point, we looked at commercial nodes. Some of these are within the plan. Some of these would be outside the Ames Urban Fringe plan area. As opportunities. So the things that we looked at specifically are natural resources and floodplains. You know, we want to continue to do a good job of preserving and protecting our natural resources. But if you look closely at the existing subdivisions where the rural development is, they're in close proximity to the Squaw Creek and the Skunk River. People want to be located close to where the natural resources are. So there's going to be this constant, balance act that's going to be taking place. We looked at the MPO, capital improvements planning, Ames capital improvements planning, county planning. We had an MPO representative and the county engineer come to a planning and zoning commission meeting and talk about transportation planning. We reviewed the county's plan, Ames and Gilbert's comprehensive plan. As I said, Gilbert just recently updated their plan. They have a really solid document that is worth reading. And I should add, it reads very well. We looked at the Ames Mobility 2040 plan, utility mapping. We reviewed the 2017 aerial zoning maps. Again, zoning permit activity, where the subdivisions were. We did communicate with school superintendents, with Ames and Gilbert, perused through the, not the study, but the input from the Ames planning and housing staff on the northwest area for sanitary sewer. We looked at sci-rise planning, and we met with the staff, with Ames and Gilbert, in February. And again, that's where they provided input on this document. What you have before you is the current land use, and the predominant land use is ag and farm service. It's the green area. Again, that's going to allow the row crops, the livestock production, dwellings on large parcels. The cross-hatched area is between 190th and 180th. This is where we were supposed to do a study. That did not happen. Just south of Gilbert's corporate limits is the urban residential area, and to the west of that is the purple area, which is planned industrial. Both of those two land uses can be annexed, so proposed development. They're encouraged to annex and develop under the city standards. Off to the periphery, you've got a light yellow area here, and that is rural residential. Those areas, for the most part, are developed under county standards. And then the yellow represents the transitional residential areas. Those, we have a role to review subdivision plats, but we typically take a secondary role. An example there is with the Irons. We reviewed the subdivision plats, but ultimately they were following the City of Ames' standards. Some of the key things that we discovered in the review, nothing major. We're not planning north-south corridors. There is something that's identified in the Ames Mobility 2040 plan. It's a long-term request to add two lanes from Grand Avenue to the new I-35. And if that happened, it would be located between the two existing interchanges that are there. But there's a lot of variables that have to work out before that can happen. So primarily what we're identifying are, the bridge that was closed on 190th, the improvement that was done on the bridge to the east, some overlay work, utilities for the area. Xenia Rural Water is really spread out in this north area. There is a gap north of the City of Ames, south of 180th. Electric is provided by two service providers, Alliant Energy and Midland Power. Natural resources, again, the Skunk River Valley to the northeast, Squaw Creek to the northwest. We've got a 200-acre resource in Peterson Park, which is awesome, west of North Dayton Avenue and south of 180th. And again, if you look at the aerial, this is where our existing subdivisions are. So this is where people want to be when they're in the unincorporated area of the county. Zoning-wise, primarily A1 Agricultural District is the predominant zoning district in the central portion. And then along to the northeast and to the northwest, you'll see pockets of R1, which is about a 25,000 square foot, half acre lot, and an AR, which is about an acre minimum lot size. We did run, Amelia did run a land evaluation site assessment for that entire stretch, and it actually is low enough to allow for applications to be submitted. But if we get requests, we would still require the submittal and review. Zoning, again, if you're looking at this map, the aerial represents the A1 agricultural district, so this is the predominant zoning. And then to the northeast, in the center here, is the Greenbelt Conservation District that follows the Skunk River. And then there is pockets of yellow, which again is transitional residential, as well as AR, agricultural zone property. And you see that same thing along the Squaw Creek area, R1 and AR zone property. There's a little pocket to the southwest, which is the wastewater treatment facility for the City of Gilbert. C2C comp plan, you see the Ames River Fringe boundary, which is a 2-mile limit from the city corporate limits of Ames. We actually designated an area that extends from the corporate limits south to 180th and to the east out to Highway 69. And it's a urban growth expansion area. We don't have specific designations in our comp plan, but it just represents, future growth. When we sat down with Gilbert staff, Nevada staff, Huxley, and some others, these were areas that they were telling us that they were planning to grow in. So they show up as a blue area. And one of our recommendations.
This one doesn't even show the new Prairie View Industrial area between Ames and Nevada. It's now part of Ames and actually kicks out Ames or 2-mile urban fringe further to the east.
So, one of our suggestions is that Ames consider like an urban expansion boundary similar to what is shown with Gilbert, or that we allow for an amendment to allow at least one additional dwelling where we've got existing dwellings on parcels, similar to what is permitted throughout the county, so that same standard would be applied equally in this location. Construction activity, I told you we had 52 zoning permits in 2017. Over half of those were in this north area. We pulled information from the population and housing growth for the Ames Mobility 2040 plan. They projected over 63,000 population in 2010 and over 85,000 people in 2040, which equates to over 32,000 households. Now, if you read the details of that plan, much of that growth is shown in the within the incorporated area of this city, but they do show some expansion areas south of Gilbert and then to the northwest, like west of George Washington Carver, where we have existing subdivisions in that area. Mentioned Gilbert's growth plans. I'll just focus on the current 2030 comprehensive plan. Talks about growth to 180th Street for urban density residential use. To the southwest, industrial, which phases into low-density residential, and then to the east, they're showing low-density residential as well. The school district provided information about an annual growth, population growth rate of 3 to 3.5%. They did have a referendum that was approved. The bond money is planned for the elementary and intermediate schools. They're trying to make entryways safer, projects related to heating and cooling, adding classrooms, and then improvements to their athletic complex. Ames sewer study, there's a lot of information in the document that we obtained. The focus, though, is that they're not seeing any extension of sanitary sewer north of 190th until such time improvements are made to their existing sanitary sewer system. There's discussion about providing sewer to the Freeburg properties south of Cameron School Road, west of George Washington Carver. However, that property is located in the gap area in the city's planning, and likely those costs are going to be borne by the developer. We had some discussions with the director of Ames about long-term sanitary sewer expansion, and they see a greater possibility of extending sanitary sewer northeast, east of Highway 69, greater than the extension to the northwest. So the Planning and Zoning Commission did meet to review the request. It was a vote of 6-1 at their April 4 meeting. They did provide some really good feedback. We identified that information in this memo. Some of the things that they addressed is, whether or not the county could take an active role in maybe reducing some of the names of Hyde, Gretton, Grant. There was a request to provide more detailed information. We have a map that kind of pinpoints some of the areas that we're making reference to, but we provided the additional requested detail in that memo that I can go through if you have questions. The chair of the Planning and Zoning Commission kind of shaped it and framed it that, this will help shape future discussions as we, work with our partners to make changes, or if we get requests from landowners or developers. It's a great starting point to move forward. There was questions about why we didn't have more on transportation planning. And there was a lot of discussion about the vehicle capacity limits for George Washington Carver, Hyde, and Highway 69. And so we had some discussions with our county engineer, Darren Moon, about that. And the input that we got is they don't have a system of monitoring the roads themselves, but they do monitor intersections. The discussion led into the improvements that they tried at 190th and Hyde to make that a four-way stop, that there's concerns with the east-west traffic night.
It was a four-way stop for about an hour.
Right. It went back to a two-way situation. We also talked about the southbound turning lane on Cameron School Road to alleviate traffic congestion there. And then our staff is working on a transportation impact analysis ordinance. And it's going to really address proposed improvements. What's the impact on peak traffic limits on proposed developments? What's the impact on the existing system? He's supporting what we're doing so far. But again, this discussion that has come up with the Planning and Zoning Commission, you know, we're trying to see if there's ways that we can infuse some of the viewpoints that were raised. It's come up several times, and so we're trying to identify ways that we can try to capture, you know, what the impact is for existing traffic levels with regard to additional improvements that are going to be planned in the future. So this is the map that we actually started with. It's labeled Figure 4. Additional detail was requested, and we did provide that. Again, I've got all of those areas attached with this presentation if you'd like to address, like me to address them. But our recommendation boils down to supporting existing areas that can be continued, supporting additional adjacent parcels that could be expanded, continue to support the urban residential designated areas, support commercial nodes. Some of these are outside the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. Encourage Ames to consider urban expansion boundary or allow for the like residential parcel subdivisions, you know, limited development. And again, we've got those 18 areas, which leads to the recommendation from the Planning and Zoning Commission, which was to support the memo as a starting point for joint review of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan North area with additional emphasis on transportation improvements to accommodate planned development comprehensively.
Absolutely. But let's just be clear on a couple of things. One, it's a recommendation for this to be the starting point for the conversation. And like everything you and your staff do, you went above and beyond. So, I mean, let's back up even further than that. So in a joint meeting between the Board of Supervisors and the Planning and Zoning Commission, we jointly agreed that this was an important item to put on their work program to come up with a starting point. Now that's been exacerbated by the fact that Ames is starting to go through this comprehensive plan, and it feels like everything's stopping while Ames goes through this comprehensive plan. And if we don't get something out there sooner rather than later, we're not going to be part of that conversation at all and how it might impact the urban fringe plan. So my question is this, and I think there were a lot of good points in there, knowing that it was joint between the Board of Supervisors and Planning and Zoning Commission that this be in your work program, knowing that this is just a starting point, give me the pushback from your one member that voted no on this, because that one surprised me.
I think it was just a matter of providing more detail about, you know, the specifics about what we were really referring to.
This looks pretty detailed.
Well, you didn't actually, the aerials, like if you look at the screen, we actually identified, outlined on an aerial, the 2017 aerial,
yep,
the location that we're referring to.
Okay.
The oval means, you know, that area could be smaller or larger depending on, you know, landowners' interest, developers' interest. And of course, if it's a situation where a designation needs to be changed, we have to have support from all three entities.
Right.
So, you know, again, I think that was part of it, trying to have a clearer understanding of what specifically we were referring to.
Okay. Well, let's just be really clear. There's only two realistic possibilities with the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. One is that we dig in and we jointly amend it to reflect the realities that we face today, right? And so jointly would be with the urban with X. Or the second real, very real possibility is that it just goes away and we're right back where we were before, where you got three different entities pulling in three different directions and no real awareness, no real structured awareness of what's going on between the three.
I hope that never happens.
But it's a real possibility if we don't move ahead, and so it's just concerning to me that when I feel like, at least internally, and talking about staff and Board of Supervisors and Planning and Zoning Commission, it all felt like we were all on the same page, and now it feels like maybe there's a chink in that we're not on the same page.
Well, and the big part is the traffic. I think there's a concern with the existing traffic levels, and if we're looking at opportunities for growth, you know, what's that going to do to the existing conditions? So, again, I think that's part of us, you know, with the ordinance, I think we can help to try to address that. But it's a discussion that needs to continue.
I listened to the audio of that meeting, and I was concerned as someone who was there from the beginning, sitting and listening and coming and writing about all this, that there wasn't a more discussion about the philosophy, about how this came to be, and so if we were going to make changes, where would the philosophy, where would we bring in our philosophy? And so I loved when transportation was brought up, because we've got to do something, right? I mean, that's been a long time about we can't continue to put housing in and have no safe, efficient way to kind of route some of it back into Ames from the fringes. But I also kind of, as I went through the plan and zipped back and forth between all of the really great graphs and things, thank you for that, is I kept on thinking about there was another philosophy beyond just one set of rules in the urban fringe plan for the development community. There was a philosophy about managing growth and philosophy about having more of everyone being on the same page about where that growth should occur. And I think that internally with our Planning and Zoning Commission, as a comment, with the situation that's happening down on the McCain property, okay, McCain, sorry, Doug, where we've now had the Planning and Zoning Board vote twice against what our agreement is, as I see it with the urban fringe plan, that there's supposed to be urban residential down there, and yet we've approved what at least two lawsuits are saying are inappropriate conditional use permits. We mean the county, not we mean the Board of Supervisors. And so I'm wondering if there's not a little bit more discord or between the two entities about what is the purpose of the urban fringe plan. So I don't know that it's necessarily just limited to one person on a vote. I see it more as I would have liked to have heard Planning and Zoning talk a little bit more about the philosophy of it. I agree with you, Rick, that we're going to end up with two options here, I think, okay? And one of them would be that it would go away. I mean, I think we all probably have discussed with someone either in the planning department over in Ames or maybe one of the elected officials or administrators that they were not thrilled when Gilbert voted against bringing in some of the land, I want to call it the Borgmeyer land up in the northwest, okay, but that there might be some rumblings about would the city, after the end of the comprehensive plan, would the city even want to continue the urban fringe plan? Doubly why we have to get into the discussion early.
So I agree with what you just said, but doubly why we better be reconcile amongst ourselves what our differences are here.
Right.
If there are differences, maybe there aren't even reasonable differences, but if there's differences, we need to reconcile them here, because our only chance to salvage the good parts, because there's a lot of good in here.
Mm-hmm.
There's some hurdles, but there's a lot of good in here. And if it goes away, I think we're far enough removed now from 2010 that people forgot what it was like in the early 2000s. I mean, it was hard to do any kind of business at all. And while it's still not easy, this is government you're dealing with. It's not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be consistent, and you're supposed to be able to understand what you're going through. But we go back to the way, especially if Gilbert gets aggressive growing south, and Ames continues to do what they're doing growing north, and we're going to continue to have requests that just hover right on the boundary of where we can do something, you end up getting something that's not real workable for anybody. And you talk about transportation. Our best chance at working on transportation in this entire region. Now, think about this. There is no true full, until Grand is completed all the way south of Highway 30, there's no true full north-south corridor from Ames to Gilbert. Not one. Right? And it creates some logistical nightmares that only working together would we ever be able to resolve. This is as close as anything we've got to formally working together. We need to be strong and unified in whatever we put forward. And this, to me, may not be the end point. In fact, there's no doubt in my mind it's not the end point. But it's a heck of a good starting point
And I think, yeah, and you guys did a great job. I mean, once again, going through this and reading it and saying, yes, thank you for making connection to connection to connection. Maybe we need to have another joint meeting with PNC. I'm saying that maybe just if we do have differences in philosophy on it. I know
there's just 6-1, so I don't think it's a huge difference. But
I was thinking about the
really
other situation.
Consistent all the way up, yeah.
I was thinking about the McKay situations too.
Sure.
About that. I mean, we are now involved in two lawsuits as a result. So.
Well, we're not.
Well,
Board of Adjustment. Board of Adjustment. Board of Adjustment. Right.
Yes, Board of Adjustment.
Yeah. Marty, questions or comments?
No, I sat here listening to a conversation happening in a part of the county that, you know, I mean, is not nearly as well versed as you two. And I am not surprised to see it will be uneven and growth either from the north and south or from the south north. I think you are just creating friction points. I think we're addressing them. I thought Jerry's department was very aggressive as far as they gave us a tiering of what they had as far as work projects to do for them. Obviously, you took on a very big one. I think that I was not expecting unanimity, but we got close. I think it's a perfectly supportable document. I get the point on the traffic concerns. I guess the question I would have, and this is probably more Darren, would be what is a peak traffic limit on a given road? I guess that's, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I think that gets to the level of service, and the standards deal with letters. So if it's level of service A, that means you can drive that road with limited interruptions, limited stopping. But if it has a lower letter like an F, that means, especially during peak times, you're going to be stopping a lot. There's going to be a lot of disruptions along the way.
Okay.
So our ordinance that we're working on is going to be addressing some of those criteria.
Okay.
But again, what we got is their focus is really on intersections for right now.
Yeah,
not necessarily the stretch.
We are clearly, and I can't only imagine what it looked like prior to this, kind of the Wild West as far as people moving out and doing development projects with no consultation to other people that might be.
Yeah, I mean, it's truly the right hand didn't know what the left hand were doing, and in some cases, developers would go through the process and get all their approvals from one of the entities and then have to start over again with the other entity, and there was no real consistency. The other thing I'll say is, I mean, you look at the growth in Story County, population-wise, the growth in Story County in the last 20 years, what, we've gone from roughly 72,000 to roughly 98,000 people, and the overwhelming majority of the growth occurred right here in this north of Ames section. I mean, you start thinking about Northridge was built in 97, Northridge Heights was built in the early 2000s, building out. Now we're seeing all kinds of other things developing in there, including some county developments. And that didn't even include Bloomington Heights, which built out about that 2000 range. We've seen a lot of growth north of Ames, and it's a very real thing we've got to deal with. And for me, this is our one mechanism that we have a chance to have some input and some consistent say in what's going on, or consistent input in what's going on. And I think it's vital that we continue. Yeah, let me come on up.
I just want to clarify. I was the no vote. Excuse me. I was the no vote, and I want to clarify. I feel like Jerry's been trying to and doing a very good job of trying to explain why I was the no vote on this. There were two reasons, and they were fairly narrow at that point. One of them was the report you're looking at, when we saw it and ended on page 10, which just has letters on it and did not have ideas of, are you talking about a quarter-quarter? Are you talking about a square mile? How much, you know, and I called Jerry, and he didn't have that morning, and he didn't have that information available, and he said, I'll get it for you, but he wasn't able to get it by the meeting, and I understand, you know, because that was a lot of work. The second thing is we did have a talk about the traffic, and we also are looking at the traffic impact analysis ordinance, which we haven't passed yet, which we're looking at it. But what it looks like, and the one thing that some of us were concerned about, and I'm not speaking for the whole commission, but what some of us were concerned about is, okay, this looks at traffic by each developer, what each developer contributes. But it doesn't look at a holistic part of you know, and okay, you can say this will work, you know, for here because the developers, you know, for this development, then one, you know, is kind of upstream, and then, and I don't know the answer. But, and we had a good talk about it, though, in terms of how, you know, what's the, how do we plan in a way that's not just piecemeal? And, you know, those were really, as I said, my objections were fairly narrow. I think that, yes, there has to be order in this area. There has to be some agreement in the fringe plan, you know, about what's going to be, you know, what's going to be zoned for more residential development and what looks eventually for annexing. And I'm not opposed to that. I think that, you know, I think the staff did an excellent job on their recommendations.
Super, thank you.
That's all I wanted to say because I think it was being, I didn't want it being portrayed differently.
Yeah, it just seems to me, so appreciate those thoughts, but this is simply put forward by planning and zoning staff to the planning and development staff, to the planning and zoning commission, and then ultimately us, as a starting point for the conversations. And so I really appreciate your concerns with all the details not being completely 100% fleshed out, but that's not what this document is. That's not what the three of us are being asked to approve. We're being asked to approve a starting point for those conversations, where all those details come, and if we don't get started, we'll never get to the end. Thank you.
As you recommend, as you remind me, the Planning and Zoning Commission is advisory.
Sure.
Not,
yeah.
Not administrative or judicial. So.
Thank you. Okay. Further discussion? Questions for Jared?
None. I appreciate the input. I would move consideration of the answer in the French plan as presented today by Jerry Moore applying.
It's the review.
Review.
I'll second the thing.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So we got a motion and a second. Morris, discussion.
Okay. So, Jerry, where do you see now that you, the staff, or we as the supervisors, the members of the Planning and Zoning Commission, where are we now going to most likely begin vocalizing these, other than having lunch with people? Okay. But, you know, where do you see us starting to take forward these concepts to begin that conversation?
Good question. We have meetings frequently with Ames and Gilbert staff on many things in the plan, so we'll continue to bring up things that are in here. I see this as something that should be put out on our website for property owners who own this land, developers who are interested in doing things. You know, that's a starting point. And again, it's very timely that we do this because of Ames going through this process. We're hoping that Ames supports a lot of the information that's in here. That's a big reason why we did it. We're, you know, we also want support.
Should we not move past hope to expectation?
What's that?
We, you know, I'm paraphrasing you, but you just said it. You said you hope that Ames should not be an expectation. That
they are their own jurisdiction.
I mean, we are in collaboration.
Right.
So I guess I set the bar a little higher.
Right.
We're trying really, really hard to give Ames and Gilbert both something that they can start to build their plans around that hopefully gives us a consistent position to talk about that area in, because quite frankly, it's the only way to salvage the urban fringe. If you get Ames going in one direction and Gilbert going in another and the county stays quiet, the urban fringe plan is dead. It's over. They'll get too far separated. There's already, Laura's pointed out, there's already a little animosity there. And so if we don't get something in front of them sooner rather than later that hopefully starts to make its way into some of their, I'm much more worried about their internal conversations than I am our external conversations with them. And if we don't get something, and I think this is it, but something like this in front of them right away, if we spend another month or 2 months working on getting to a starting point, it will be too late. They'll already have their direction set, and the you want to impact the direction of any entity, impact it early and slightly, and they start moving in the direction you need it to go. This is our attempt at doing that, right? I hope that we, the three of us, are really unified as this being a starting point for trying to do exactly what you're suggesting, Marty, and that is make an expectation rather than a hope.
I would say the fallout that I got out of our drainage district meeting and Grant 5 was the fact that we are only through that meeting and the conversations that are surrounded, finding out what Ames is proposing in their annexation portion. And it's just like, okay, we're operating in the same county, trying to do things collectively and collaboratively. Information sharing would be an expectation so that we don't work across purposes. And that, I guess, my comment reflected what we had last month in this room.
Absolutely. And so I've been risen, and I'll come to you, Laura, if I didn't. So we've got both Deb and Leanne sitting in the audience who have been with the county for a few years and remember what the days between the county and Ames used to look like before we went down this road of really collaborating in a lot of different areas. I'm telling you, we don't want to go back to those days where it is truly Ames standing on one side and the county standing on the other and very few conversations between. And this is part of trying to maintain what we worked so hard the last. You started working on the urban fringe plan, Leanne, when? And it took till 2010 to get it passed, right?
Six. And then
six.
The 2080 agreement is
10. Because I signed the 2080 agreement, which is why I know it was 10 that came in. But that's, I mean, think about it. That's 11 years to get from beginning of this to signing the 2080. We don't want to see it go away. We want to see it amend and continue to push for good, strong collaboration between our staffs primarily, but even at the elected officials.
Well, and it's a disservice to property owners or anyone interested in acquiring land if they don't know clearly, you know, what it's designated, what the process is to do subdivision, commercial site plan, whatever it is. They should be clear, and that's what this Ames River Fringe Plan.
Well, I think you guys did a phenomenal job putting this together, and I'm actually one who usually, Laura, you hear me making jokes all the time. I kind of embrace government movement pretty slowly. I mean, we do move slowly. This is one of those times that we don't have another 6 weeks. We got to go if we're going to go. Or we can just sit back and let whatever happens happen.
Oh, I don't want to see a sit back because of the relationship that has been formed. Well, the 15 years I've been here and seeing what it was like when I came in 2002 and covered it now, how it is. And I just, Marty, on your expectation, I wanted to move forward on that. And on your reference for a Grant 5 meeting, that meeting could have gone much less amicably than it did if there had not been the kind of the catching of you or whether it was Kent Rohde the week before that, wait, there are plans here that Ames have that we don't know anything about. And so definitely reaching out. And I am very committed to this as a starting point. I bet all of us could find one place in it where we can take a look and say, no, I don't like that, or I've got other thoughts. But, yeah, I'm very committed.
Okay, you make a motion to that?
I already have a motion in a second.
Oh, good. Yeah. Outstanding. Further discussion then?
None.
Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Quarterly finance. Thanks.
Thank you, Eric.
Quarterly financial report update from Lisa Mark.
Good afternoon, Ms. Hi. Good afternoon. I'll make this brief because I think we're all ready for it to be brief.
Mind reader.
End of the third quarter, we're at 75% of the year. We have three departments and expenses that are over that. We have 12 that are over in revenues, which is always a good sign. Overall, we're at 65.8% of our budgeted expenditures. I do have an amendment I'm preparing. The deadline was Friday for departments, and I'll be bringing that to you next Tuesday, the request. See where you want to go with that. It's looking good.
Yeah, well, I mean, at 75% of the year, you spent 65% of the money and brought in 85% of the revenue, you're doing all right.
Right.
Mic drop. That is a good story.
That's what it is. All right. Anything further on this, or I'd take a motion to approve?
No, this is just enough.
This is just
an update, and I won't take a motion to approve. Any questions for Lisa?
None.
All right. Thanks, Lisa. Public forum 2, opportunity for members of the public to comment on anything you'd like to comment on. Nope. See no one moving to the microphone. Liaison assignments, Marty.
In the DCAMP meeting last week, we still have $18,000 to apportion, or it rolls back to Human Services. We've done some outreach to some organizations to see if they would like to take us up on the offer, which is always a good thing.
I always like those mini grants. The last 60 days of the year, get some money out.
Darren is kind of saying, let's get started, folks.
And that would be not our Darren Moon, as Darren Thompson of
DHS. He is a wonderful man to work with. I would have to say, and I referenced earlier, the conservation volunteer dinner on Thursday night was houseful, and it is pretty pleasing to see that you have conservation that has grown themselves into the point that they have so many people, and I'm sure that room, not everybody was not there, that does volunteer work in behalf of conservation in Story County in attendance, and the presentation was wonderful. It was done in a farm boy, by the way, manner that was very, it was the younger Jim Peace. They had a real exchange there to explain who they were in relation to Jim Peace, gave way to this young man, and this young man spoke in deference to Jim, and it was a good conversation. Mike wasn't there, but I thought that Jim did a great job of picking up on the program. I won't go any further, but that is a wonderful place to do anything at. Got an opportunity to speak with a small contingent of Cambridge on economic development opportunity. Got them in touch with a potential developer. That meeting will take place this afternoon. Let's hope we have good news coming out of that. And Loris and I got the chance to attend the historical groups yesterday, and it was a quick 2 hours. And it is just a fascinating conversation to listen to, not necessarily participate in, but listen to, when you hear people speaking about that which is taking place in their community, how they try to both honor, acknowledge it, and maintain it, and the struggles that they have to do all three.
Outstanding. Laura.
Okay. Last week's Transportation Collaboration met, and just want to point out that Deb Shildroth volunteered to step up to help United Way out with that collaboration, since the person who had been coordinating it that worked for United Way has got married and moved to Warden County. Doesn't want to make the drive anymore, but Debbie did a great job. And we went over the new routes for SkyRide. Received very well. I did tour IBRM facilities and did see where they'll be asking us for some money down the road. Then Boost met on Thursday night while Marty was out there at the conservation event. You were there too, right?
I was. Okay,
thank you. And yesterday was the deadline to hear from Parenting Way about what they're going to do about owing us money. I have not received an email yet from our chair letting us know if we've received anything. We did learn that the feds did inquire. The Inspector General's office has contacted the Executive Director of Boost. But after they talked, it's only about $3,000 of federal money. The rest of it is state money. And so the Inspector General representative told Mary and Cressy that we doubt we're going to step in. So the board is struggling right now with any legal representation we would pay for would come out of the money that we would rather give on either scholarships for preschool, or we'd rather to fund early childhood programs. And we just got all the applications in for programs for fiscal year 19, and there's a $64,000 gap between the asks and the money we have available. And that doesn't count the preschool scholarships. So I will come back to you and let you know what we end up deciding, but it's a difficult position for the board. We want to hold Parenting Way accountable, but at this point, it looks like our county attorney has declined, saying that it's not in her role to be able to represent us. And so the AG's office has not gotten back.
Well, this isn't a Story County entity.
It's not a Story County entity. I mean, that's the whole point. I'm the only one on the board who's represented, if you will, but that's as a supervisor. So we're just kind of struggling. How do we get this $25,000 of tax money back if we can't sue them? So moving on, the Central Iowa Regional Transportation Planning Group met, and I'm happy to announce that among the grants approved were Story County got $200,000 for Section here, the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail,
very good.
And Huxley
actually got another $240,000 for their work on their part of the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail. So that was positive. This week I have the CERHA, which is the Central Iowa Housing Authority annual meeting. And then I've got a meeting with various entities every week from Aging Resources. I'm trying to make Roland on Wednesday night. So
good. Okay. Well, Marty mentioned the volunteer dinner for conservation, about 150 Story County people who volunteer in Story County or donate, and it was a cool event. I was happy to.
I bought a lot of pizza.
We had that's a good story. We'll tell some other time about the caterer. And if there's nothing else, I'd take a motion to adjourn. So move.
That's it.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.
Okay. So the caterer is up.